Newsweek.com. Tomorrow's news today. Real time, uncensored, unstoppable. AlexJonesLive.com. Take a stand. Share the link.
Do you want to fight? You better believe you've got one!
Gentlemen, it is Monday, August 3rd, 2026. I am your host, Alex Jones. And I know that we cover the Iran war probably 50% of the time now. For a lot of you that are already super informed, you're like, we already know the disaster. We understand the angles. We don't need you to tell us. Well, we're trying to stop the war, so this broadcast is not for those of you that are already super awake. It is up to you to reach out to people that don't know the great peril we're in with the facts and to point out that you were right. And I was right, and Tucker was right, Tulsi Gabbard was right, and Joe Kent was right, and we were all right. Because this war is designed by the globalists to collapse the world economy. It's already done that. It is designed to engulf us in a new planetary war, which even the Financial Times of London is calling a new world war. And they are preparing the draft in Europe. They are preparing the draft here. The Iranians won't even talk to Trump. He continues to lie and say that they are. They hold the cards. The Pentagon warned him in an assessment of this. And look, I know we know all of that. But then you're going to see desperate actions by Israel and the State Department lashing out at communist Spain, who does want to invade the country, who does want replacement migration, who does want a permanent third world underclass they can control and activate to burn down Spain anytime people try to resist the communists. But that gun kicks as hard as it shoots. So Israel last year and this year said, we're going to make a deal with Morocco, so the State Department, to take all these Spanish-held areas that have been under their control for hundreds of years to control the Strait of Gibraltar. That's about strategic waterways. Michael Young has continued to warn on this show just a few months ago that he believed Morocco would move and take control of those Spanish areas, which they're trying to do. And by the way, all the invaders, the 80,000, have not been kicked out of Ceuta and other areas. And we have the State Department officially recognizing a few months ago, not just Ceuta, but other areas saying that is part of Morocco. And Thomas Massie posted a link. I posted it last night on X. We'll put it on screen next segment to the legislation that passed just a few months ago, giving $40 million to Morocco, specifically the country of Morocco, the Islamic caliphate run by a king, gave it to him. And said, this is because we recognize you control Ceuta and these other Spanish areas, and we think you should take it. So when they pass the aid bill, it's in the aid bill that this is to recognize that this is yours. So our State Department did this with Israel. Israel's bragging about it, helping these groups. It's all part of the Abraham Accords to make this deal. And now it's happened, and now we've been covering it since last week. And the neocons run around saying, we're completely insane. None of this is happening. So this is an example of how we go fight the Muslims over there. They end up over here. We have 45 times the Muslims in the United States and Europe, same number than we had 25 years ago before 9/11. And now it's the same thing. We go take out Assad, and then we put al-Qaeda in charge there. And now Trump says he wants to use al-Qaeda against the people in Lebanon. Said that 3 weeks ago. So our governments are running these people. And I'd covered that 25 years ago. People couldn't believe it, even though it was in the documents. Now it's mainstream news. Okay, State Department funds al-Qaeda and ISIS. Okay, Israel funds al-Qaeda and ISIS. But still, when we point this out, we're the kooks, we're the crazy people. Oh, Israel founded Hamas. Oh, Israel, Netanyahu doubled their funding before October 7th. Those are all public facts. Times of Israel, Haaretz, Jerusalem Post. But what's the bigger picture? What's about to go down? We'll break it all down. Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with, My Decision. and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but benzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search benzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
Discover trends and global developments years before they happen, right here on The Alex Jones Show.
All right. When you have a world war, you have major powers on multiple continents lined up with each other, and they have proxies, they have rump states, they have subdivisions or countries that are subservient to them or beholden to them that are generally used as the place to start the conflict. And the last two major world wars and the major wars before that almost always begin when you have the big powers funding a subgroup and another big power funding another subgroup as proxies, as hybrid wars, as shadow wars to fight it out. Then the wars expand, more resources are poured in, it becomes clear that the major powers are really fighting NATO, the EU, the US against Russia, Israel, the US against Iran, who's allied with Russia and China. And then they'll start getting in fights with their neighbors, who there are different alliances with. That will trigger other alliances to kick in. And then at a certain point, you can't hide it anymore because it spreads and it spreads and it spreads. This is the classic way you get a major war. And so we have conflict going on all over Eastern Europe, in Russia, in Ukraine. You have Ukraine sinking Iranian ships, you know, 700 miles away. You have missiles being fired by Iran further and further out. You have mysterious drone attacks on Egyptian ports by the Suez Canal. It looks like that was a false flag. You have the Houthis coming into the Red Sea. You have China getting more and more aggressive in the South China Sea, taking islands around the Philippines, other areas. You had all of this together. You have cyber attacks on seven states, water supply. Who knows if that's real or false flag or just completely made up? There's so much deception we don't know. The first casualty of war is the truth. And then you also have migrant flows being used as weapons. And yes, the globalists, the left, wants to bring in Muslims to be a permanent underclass that can burn everything down if they're ever given the order to hold the general population hostage. But when Israel got mad last year at Midnight Hammer, when Spain wouldn't let us use their bases for B-2 bombers and for Midnight Hammer, and then for the full war 157 days ago, Israel said, we're going to support Morocco and other Muslim countries in North Africa taking areas that Spain has controlled and that are part of Spain, going back to the time that they fought the Moors. Why is Morocco called Morocco? That's because that's where the Moors are from. So it's the land of the Moors, and they're the Arab slave traders. They were control the African slave trade, and they would also control the slavery of whites in Europe, selling them all over the Middle East, and as far out as Malaysia, selling white slaves all over the Pacific. Over 2 million women, it's estimated, were kidnapped just by the Moors alone before they fully took Spain and controlled it for hundreds of years. You know, you look this up, the Romans described the Spaniards as having red hair or blonde hair and blue eyes. Well, most Spaniards don't today because they're part Moor. Just like Italians had blonde hair, red hair, or brown hair. And now, you know, the more further south you go in Italy, the darker they get. You look at somebody like Dan Bongino, sure, if he did test his genetics, he's part African. He has a plastic African skull. And yet, you have the joke about Sicilians having, you know, large penises. It's not a joke. It's just well known on average because they're part African. And that's because the Moors are part African. And they conquered Sicily, parts of southern Italy, which is southern Italy today. They almost took Rome over three times, but they stopped them about there over and over again. And that's why Eastern Europeans are dark. Also, is because of the Muslims and the Moors and other groups invading into those areas. So this is something Europe has gone through. You know, people go see a movie like Gladiator and they go, Russell Crowe doesn't look Spanish. He's got brown hair and blue eyes. So that's what Spaniards look like. And if you look at the upper class still in Spain today, you go there and you see it, they're basically tall European white people that basically look like English or something. But that's just the way the universe works, okay? So you need to understand that whites are 7% of the world population and dwindling. And there's a weird existential class envy thing around the world where you see the advertisements and the culture, you know, that's been seen as, you know, really cool. And I don't care about being cool. But now the left has reversed that into destroy the whites, their capitalism, their evil. Once you destroy them, once you devour them, you will be a real boy. Kind of like Pinocchio has to do a good deed before you go from being a wooden puppet to being a real boy. Well, the left and the UN teach once you destroy the white people and, you know, grind their bones to make your bread, then, you know, somehow you will absorb it and then you will be the West once you sit in all those offices, once you've done that. So there is a war against the West and you have the Israel lobby to a great extent pushes that war against the West. And does not see itself as the West, sees itself at war with the West and with the Muslims as well. But Israel, a lot of its leadership sees Islam as a junior enemy, as to that of the new Rome or the West. And so there's a long push of Israeli leaders bragging about helping organize Muslim, flooding into Europe. The Catholic Church is heavily involved as well. They're controlled by the Jesuits, the top. And very leftist as well. The average Catholic isn't doing that. So the average Jew is involved. But the leadership of these systems is definitely doing that. And so when you see 80,000 of these people organized, being directed by the border police of Morocco to invade Spanish-held areas of Ceuta and other areas, it is a fact that the Israeli newspapers are saying, great, we're behind this, finish the job. I already show you those headlines. And you know, I was saying last year, Spain will pay a very high price. And then you have the State Department, Rubio, saying we recognize Spain to take all those areas in Northern Sahara. And then, of course, you have the legislation that passed a few months ago that Congressman Massey pointed out we can put on screen. I have it posted at Real Alex Shows on X with links directly to thomas.loc.gov, the congressional website. And that it has the notes in the $40 million aid package, just a gift, to the Moroccan king, says right there that this is to recognize that you control all of those territories, that we do not recognize Spain as having any ownership over Ceuta or other areas. So that is the facts. There it is on screen for you. And of course, this was all completely organized. And it's in the big picture about controlling the different straits. And as we've been telling you for several years with Michael Vian, as this new world war heats up, you will see battles for all the different straits, like the Strait of Gibraltar, there at the opening to the Mediterranean Sea. That is so important. You also have the Kushners taking over another big island that's at another strait, right there by Italy and Albania. The old Russian missile base that has 3,000 plus bunkers and underground bases that they had handed over to them by the Rothschilds. And that's been a big point of contention there. That's to control that strait. And so, you know, they all claim it's for development and for this and that. This is all strategic warfare that is going on. And of course, this is just a fact. It's not about demonizing Israel. It's not about demonizing even America. It's about understanding what's happening as adults looking at this and realizing it. When I came out last week and was covering this, I saw the bots hitting me in the paid influencers saying, "You're insane. Why would you bring Israel into this?" I was just reading Jerusalem Post and the Times of Israel. I was just reading what they said. I was just reading legislation. I was just reading what they did. Now, then Trump turns around and says, oh, see, you need to vote for us in the midterms or we'll be flooded by illegals by the Democrats. But really what he's saying is, we'll just allow them to flood you. Now, again, it's true that the communists in Spain have opened the borders. It's true they've legalized the illegals. It's true they want a permanent underclass, but they don't want 60,000 a day. That's a little too obvious. They want it to be, you know, 10,000 a week. They already legalized 3 million, a million and a half last year, a million and a half this year. It's hell that are inside Spain, on the mainland. Tens of millions, obviously, have flooded Europe in the last few years total. And now with the collapse of fertilizer production and energy prices exploding, the UN's estimating the biggest migrant flow ever. The point is, these are all used as weapon systems with the osmotic pressure of these populations. And it's a very dirty trick. Just because I don't like the communists, not for the same reasons Israel doesn't like them. I think Spain has a right to not let us use their military bases. But I don't like the communists. I don't like their plan. I don't like them flooding their country with Muslims. At the same time, I don't support, you know, a 50-fold increase in one day, which ends up hurting the people of Europe in general. And it's all part of a larger Islamic invasion. Remember, Spain was captured for over 500 years by the very Moors whose progeny are now invading right now. So that's a big deal. So here is a clip, a good Gen X breakdown from the site Gen X Girl on X that dovetails with a report from the New York Times about, oh, this appears to be very well organized. Yeah, no kidding. And then what we can expect more of as this new world war expands. Meanwhile, the Pentagon says we've run out of missiles and can't give Israel more. We won't have interceptors to protect ourselves and our own country from missile attack. That means submarines off the coast, things like that, intercontinental ballistics shot over the North Pole. And then we also have, again, Trump saying, yeah, I've got a deal. We're talking. The Iranians are. That's not true. It's all lies. He just says that to try to jack up the markets. That's not going to work really anymore. People are, you know, calling it tacoing. Trump always chickens out. He's not really chickening out. He got tricked into a failed war that was going to go this way, 90%+ chance. And so he just keeps trying to have perception that he's winning, everything's okay, when the facts are dawning. And even the Financial Times of London, this globalist, you know, says, well, Trump's big gamble is failing and we're in a strategic defeat, which means we can blow up their stuff. But just like Vietnam, we were winning material-wise, if you count it as how much stuff you destroyed. So were the British against us in our Revolutionary War. But if you count it in strategic long-term, this is a big loss. And Israel has said, well, this is a big loss for the U.S. and Iran. It's a big win for us. This is an ideal situation. Smotrich and Gavir and all of them have said that. Very cold-blooded. The bragging of these guys is bizarre. They'd do better for them if they didn't brag so much, but they're not really arrogant. They're confident. They're confident. They have AIPAC. They control much of Congress. And they're directing us as a kamikaze, just like NATO's been using Ukraine as a kamikaze in this proxy war. So here's those two reports.
Okay, guys, let me explain what is going on, because shit just got really interesting with the situation with Morocco and Spain. Okay, so what's important to understand is all roads lead back to maritime access for Israel. Israel currently has 6 ports. 5 of the ports transit through the Mediterranean into the Straits of Gibraltar, and 1, Eilat, transits through the Red Sea, going through the Bab el-Mandeb. Prior to the Iran war, Israel was also receiving imports for natural resources like oil and gas through the Straits of Hormuz, going through the Red Sea. So 6 days after the U.S. and Israel launched a war against Iran, Iran banned all ships bound to Israel and the U.S. coming out of the Straits of Hormuz. On June 8th, the Houthis of Yemen joined the blockade and banned all ships going to and from Israel that transited through the Red Sea and the Bab el-Mandeb, similar to what happened in 2024 and earlier in 2025. So now Israel is limited to only one maritime access route through the Mediterranean. But there is a risk involved because similar to the Bab el-Mandeb that is a choke point for the Red Sea and the Straits of Hormuz, which is a choke point out of the Persian Gulf, the Mediterranean has a choke point, which is the Straits of Gibraltar, which is controlled by Spain. Spain is a problem for Israel because they have taken steps to break diplomatic ties with Israel. Even more important is that they have also restricted arms shipments to Israel because of the Gaza genocide. Spain barred U.S. military vessels and aircraft carrying weapons or munitions destined for Israel from utilizing Spanish military facilities like Naval Station Rota and Morón Air Base. Spain also restricted its airspace and denied the use of joint bases Rota and Morón for U.S. military assets linked to operations and strikes against Iran. So where are Rota and Morón located? Right on the Straits of Gibraltar. So if you're Israel and you need to regain control of this access point, what do? You look for allies who are willing to support your genocide and your war in Iran, like your Abraham Accords partner, Morocco. Then you get your allies in the U.S. government to push to have Ceuta and Melilla, Spanish-Moroccan territories, redesignated as Moroccan territory so that you can have greater control over the Straits of Gibraltar. You even get members of Congress to allocate funding for this endeavor. But because you need public support from Europeans and Americans, you orchestrate a fake migrant invasion into Ceuta. And then you claim that these migrants are reaching Europe and this is a public crisis. Except the narrative quickly fell apart as footage showed police, Moroccan police, allowing the migrants in and in some cases inviting them to cross the border. Reporting showed that these young boys under the age of 20 were encouraged on social media to go to Ceuta. In some cases, they were told that the Spanish government wants them to come. Then precisely 24 hours later, the White House releases a statement. The United States has been clear. We recognize Moroccan sovereignty over Western Sahara, and we support Morocco's serious, credible, and realistic autonomy proposal as the only basis for a just and lasting solution. Any other path prolongs the status quo and is unacceptable. The urgently needed solution will only bring peace to the region, but prosperity and greater integration for all of Africa. This dispute must end now, and the United States will continue to drive progress towards that end. So what does Western Sahara have to do with the Straits of Gibraltar? Well, it extends Moroccan territory. It literally makes Moroccan territory from the Straits of Gibraltar all the way down further south, securing maritime access through that whole region under Morocco, a U.S. ally and an Israel ally, Abraham Accords member, and a country who has a military security agreement with Israel. So the moral of the story, boys and girls, is that another weekend passed by, and we saw another escapade where young boys lost their lives. 57 were reported to have drowned trying to swim to Sweta. And the U.S. military also reported that we don't have enough destroyers to protect Israel because we've run ourselves into the ground protecting Israel. So another weekend, more lives lost, more military degradation, all in the goal of saving Israel to continuous genocide.
Yeah, and that's someone doing a good job and mainly focusing on Israel. There's other pieces as well. But yes, Israel's the driving force with their lobby and all of it. And you're going to see more of these escapades through these proxy wars. And it's just spreading. And out of the growing season, had over a third of the fertilizer cut off, not just Strait of Hormuz, but Ukraine was a huge producer. And the UN's been running around with all this pressure groups from BlackRock shutting down food production. This fall, this winter, and next spring is going to be a disaster. And we're almost 6 months into this war now, and you see what's happening with inflation. But we're told everything's fine, go back to sleep. Now, here's a New York Times piece, even in their whitewash, admitting this was all an organized invasion. Everybody's not been kicked out like the news is saying. Countless videos of rape, robbery, murder, street battles going on right now, not just in Ceuta, but several other Spanish-held enclaves as well. Let's play that clip.
I'm here in Ceuta, which is in North Africa, but it's Spanish territory. About 50,000 people have come over the border of Morocco and into Ceuta within the last 2 days. It's causing an immigration crisis here in Spain.
Authorities have confirmed that dozens of people have died trying to make the crossing.
Lots of the people who came over, they heard on social media or they heard through word of mouth that the borders were not being checked. And that the Moroccan police, who are usually really strict, were sort of waving them through. The Spanish law enforcement just didn't have the numbers to do anything. All they could do was try and keep an orderly ingress into the country. The path to Ceuta for a lot of these people was swimming around the border. Spain is now going to make that tougher. They're going to put some buoys out there and make it a longer trip to get here. The population here in Ceuta is only about 84,000 people. So if you have 50,000 people coming, you feel that. The population is almost doubling. There was just not enough infrastructure to deal with all those people. There was nothing to eat, nowhere to sleep, and nothing to drink. And you could really feel the exhaustion of all these people who were here. And so you did have some people who were saying they wanted to come here to Spain to make a new life and that they felt that they had great opportunities here or more opportunities, at least, than in Morocco. And then when I spoke to locals, they were furious with the government for letting this happen. One thing to remember is that we're not in mainland Spain, and there's still a sea to cross if they want to do that. As that reality dawned on people, especially a reality where there wasn't much food or water, they realized, well, maybe actually it's time to go back. 45,000 of the people headed back to Morocco. What was apparent, I think, from what people brought with them, which was not much, was that people didn't really plan for what would come next when they got here. And I think that's why we're seeing a lot of them go back.
All right, let's go to break. We'll stop there.
This New York Times.
Now, we have footage of now the boats arriving in mainland Spain when we come back. And what to expect in this expanding war the longer we stay in it. Again, Republicans are going to lose the midterms. They're going to blame those of us that didn't support the war for losing when it's completely unpopular. Over 80% of Americans are against this. It'll be even higher as that begins to unfold. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Do you want to try some?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. We'll send you some methylene blue. And if you guys want to get it too, you can get it from thealexjonesstore.com. I invented two proprietary products. Gavin, I'm a business owner, supplement formulator, Power Plant and Methyl Drive. You guys got to get them right now. Magnesium, CoQ10, PQQ, Rhodiola Rosea, Golden Root. It's got the cordyceps, the zinc, the selenium. It's got the boron as well. Raise your free testosterone. Raise your ability to get through hard days and hard tasks. And ultimately raise the potential of the methylene blue that you're probably already taking if you're watching this network. We have that available for you. It's a really good deal, really good price. People just kind of across the internet have told me they've started taking it and they've been able to get to the gym again. They've been able to get through hard days at work again. Specifically, that power plant formula, If you're looking for something like Supermill Vitality from back in the day, I basically invented a better version of that. That's called Power Plant. It's available solo or also in the Power Drive bundle at thealexjonesstore.com. Look up what proper magnesium does for your body. Look up what proper methylated vitamin B12 does for your body. All of that and more is in Power Plant and Methyl Drive, and you can get them all three together on the Power Drive bundle along with the other phenomenal products. We have the turmeric. We've got the MK Ultra, which is a phenomenal multivitamin, also nootropic as well. Ultimate Burn. If you really, you're trying to lose a little bit of weight, here's the thing. I've been doing a good job. I'm almost down to like 205 now. If you want to join me on a weight loss journey, you can get yourself some Ultimate Burn. And all the other products we have, like Methylene Red specifically, are also great for that. Methylene Red also has that CoQ10. Get the turmeric, get the blue, get the gummies, get the colostrum. My grandma is not capping on jaw for real. It really helped her with her hair if you want it. You got the T3 trifecta iodine, the absolute staple of the old network. Got the Ultimate Sea Moss, Ultimate Turmeric, the bovine beef tallow. It's got the methylene blue inside the tallow, incredible antioxidant, methylene blue. I already went over it, tried to with Gavin a little bit. We've got the zeolite, incredible for heavy metal support, dechelation, stuff like that. The Shilajit complex, we've even got smelling salts. Ultimate Life Force, which is absolutely incredible. It's got the natokinase in there. It's got things, theoretically to, you know, attenuate certain anecdotal things with the spike protein. Not making a health claim there. Talk to your doctor. It's just a top-rated formula for a reason. The Ultimate CMOS gummies in another form. The creatine, the Ultimate Power. We've got tons of sales on the different forms and flavors of the Ultimate Power pre-workout. We've got the NAD. We've got the Methyl Drive. We've got the MK Ultra. We've got Optimal Human. I got drink mixes for you. I got powders. I got energy gum. This is what you need. We have an electrolyte powder. It is so important in the summer months to get proper electrolyte support. And if you look at a lot of these blends on the grocery store shelf, they are pure garbage. Get yourself some Optimal Human. Get yourself some beef tallow. Get yourself some Atomic Defense. All of that and more is available at thealexjonesstore.com. I did not even mention the water filtration, shower filtration that we have, the Patriot apparel that we have, the collectible coins, memorabilia that we have. Literally everything that you could ever want theoretically or practically to support this operation, you can get at thealexjonesstore.com. This is what makes us different. Other people do a show so they can sell a product. We sell the best products in the world so that we can do the best show in the world. That's what makes this operation completely different, completely viewer, listener, supported, funded, owned by you at home when you decide, when you choose to make the decision to support us and get the phenomenal products at thealexjonesstore.com. I'm telling you again, the Power Drive Bundle, Methyl Drive, Power Plant, Methylene Blue, that is like the trifecta.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today. Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want to stop tyranny? Well, so does he. Live from Austin, Texas, broadcasting worldwide, it's Alex Jones.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Coming up in a few minutes, I'm going to play you this clip right here of Mark Levin. Over the weekend, he came out and he said, I don't care about the economy. I don't care about what it does to the world. I don't care if the war is wider. I don't care what we do. We've got to continue to fight Iran. You know, he wants ground troops. He's talked about using nuclear weapons. Here we are. How many days are we in this war? I forget the exact number. Let's pull that up if we can. 150-something days in. And it just gets worse and worse. Strategic defeat. That's a Pyrrhic victory. 156 days in. And we're the bad guys for being right about all this. In Trump's relationship, he said, with Netanyahu and the neocons, is closer than it's ever been. So they're the good people for getting us into this and for being never Trumpers. We're the bad people. And I saw a photo over the weekend of a Tucker Carlson's main studio slash hunting compound. Talk about a man cave. And there was Congressman, former Congressman, or current Congressman Massey, former Congresswoman MTG, and Joe Kent, former head of counterterrorism, just sitting around the table. And people, the neocons, are saying, these are traitors, arrest them, put them in prison. They did photoshops of them with headdresses on, saying they were all Muslims or Arabs. When it's Qatar that gave Trump a $300 million jet, when it's Israel that founded and funded Hamas, when it's NATO and Turkey that and Israel that took over Syria and put al-Qaeda in charge, when it's Trump saying, let's use al-Qaeda on Lebanon and have Syria invade, when it's Israel saying they're going to have greater Israel, when it's Israel and the State Department recognizing not just Morocco, but other North African Muslim countries saying you can take any land you want from European countries. All of this is going on. And we're sitting here with not working for Qatar, not working for Iran, but working for common sense and trying to stop all this. And we're the bad guys. These people are completely discredited. They are total and complete frauds at every level. And we have to continue to expose that they're the ones that sucked us into this. They're the ones with AIPAC controlling Congress. They're the ones steering us into a complete and total war. They're the ones trying to gear up ground troops, with Trump saying he's leaning towards that, with the national draft being prepared. I mean, this is a disaster. We can't just sit here and let ourselves be sleptwalked into total destruction. We have to repudiate Mark Levin and the rest of these people. So yes, if Trump continues this disastrous war, we absolutely have to push for the War Powers Act, where Congress only failed by 3 votes 2 weeks ago to end this war. We can get the 3 votes. We can end this damn war. And if we have to, we can impeach Trump. Or the economy is going to be completely shredded and we're going to be in an endless war. And we're at the end of a cycle. We're at the bankruptcy phase of the Great Reset. We needed Trump's recovery plan to work. That's why I was cheerleading, and it was a good plan. I talked to a lot of economists. I researched it myself. But now that's all gone sideways. It was all hinged on slowing inflation. Instead, it's expanded based on energy prices exploding. So I know we all know the problem, but here we are. So here is Mark Levin wringing his hands and saying, we've got to continue this. We've got to continue this with all the same crap we always hear from him. With him up there on his never Trump high horse, he's now the savior. Here it is.
A power vacuum. That's what's needed. Continue hitting ballistic missile and drone factories to destroy as much of its offensive military capability as possible, helping to protect, for example, the Arab oil infrastructure. And I know they're lobbying the White House. There have been reports on this. They're concerned about a wider war because they're concerned about the oil infrastructure, a worldwide depression, and so forth and so on. It won't happen. It won't happen. But take out all the offensive abilities they have, and I think that's what the president is doing, as a matter of fact. Target government buildings. Target the IRGC and regular army facilities. More on the communication centers. Hit their banks. Hit their financial centers. If we want victory, and we want to get this over with, this is the only way to do it. And reconsider our aversion to hitting their oil production and refining facilities and infrastructure. The fact is, this is the surest way to cripple the regime. Don't worry about rebuilding the infrastructure. There are multiple ways to do that after the war, with a mini Marshall program or investment from private sector and so forth and so on. There are ways to deal with it. Do not worry about that right now. The focus and the concern should be victory. Victory brings many opportunities and possibilities. Diplomatically, no ceasefire for at least 30 days and perhaps longer. No negotiating for at least 30 days and perhaps longer. We need to meet our objectives first on the battlefield. Financially, militarily, in every other way.
None of what he says even comports with reality. The United States and Israel have been hitting their infrastructure. They have hit a bunch of the old infrastructure. They've blown up every university in the country. They've blown up most of the bridges. The Iranians are set up for this. They are not vertically integrated, but they are at parallel construction. And they're begging for us to launch a ground invasion. Their back's against the wall. They're in a war of attrition. The only move they have is to fight it out. And that's what they're doing. And we have already had a strategic defeat. And again, Israel arrogantly brags, their finance minister and others, this is an ideal situation for them. So this is going to continue on. Trump is trying to get the Pentagon to send in enough troops to invade. When I flew out on this trip, all I saw was troops loading on airplanes to go to the Middle East. I've never seen the airports so full of military. And that's where we are. And so Trump is apt to double down on this failure. That's why we've got to have the public pressure against us. That's why I'm saying we've got to threaten the impeachment. We got to pass the war powers, not because I support the Democrats, not because I like what they're doing. This disastrous war is going to get them elected. I'm thinking a few steps ahead. Leftists don't listen to my show. Leftists want to put me in prison. I care about populists. I care about Christians. I care about nationalists. I care about Americans. I care about people, black, white, old, young, Hispanic, Asian, that love freedom and justice and want the West to succeed. And the threat is Islam, and the globalists are allied with it and using it. The threat is the Chi-Coms, and the globalists are allied with them and using it. BlackRock and the whole panopticonic surveillance system above it, that I'm going to get to in a moment, is something that really affects us all. Got big news on Flock cameras and Axon and the rest of it here in a moment. Huge guest coming up with Harrison Smith and more. And again, I'm back tomorrow. But the point is, ladies and gentlemen, that this is a historic moment, and this war is everything because it's expanding like a black hole and sucking everything into it. And remember, this independent voice, our independent voice, our guest, our crew, what we do reaching tens of millions a day is so vital. The system wouldn't be spending all this time and all this energy doing all this if our opposition to them wasn't slowing them down and in many cases wasn't stopping them. So that's why when you share the video feeds at Roll Alex Jones on X and at rumble.com/Alex Jones Show Live and alexjoneslive.com, it is a revolutionary act. So keep doing it on your email list, on your text message list, in person, on X, on Instagram, everywhere. You have the power. On TikTok, take clips of my show, share it, different guests we have on. You are the ones that magnify all this. You're the reason we're having so much success. You're the reason the bad guys are coming after us, which I'm welcome to be attacked because I know we're having a big effect for good. But I want to win. And please support us financially while getting great products at the same time. We have a huge sale that is about to end. I've been so busy, I haven't even looked up when it ends. I think it ends yesterday, but I got so busy, I wasn't even looking at it before I went live on the show to see if that's continuing. Yes, the ultimate summer sale, they got notes here to me because I've not gotten back with them, now ends tomorrow night. Was going to end last night, but I've been so busy, I haven't come up with a new sale. So that's good for you. 50% off Ultimate Power, the 10-hour clean energy, even better than Turbo Force. Methylene Red Capsules, absolutely incredible. And, of course, Mind Fuel, Nootropic Energy Shots, all 50% off, 40% off our Zeolite Tincture, Methylene Blue Tincture, CMOS Gummies, Irish CMOS, Shilajit Gummies, Methylene Blue Gummies. Oh, those are, by the way, back in stock, very popular. Those are all 40% off. 30% off the bovine colostrum, the creatine power, the methylene blue capsules, the Shilajit capsules, the turmeric gummies, and the CMOS caps. Those are all running low. That's all at the Alex Jones Store, thealexjonesstore.com. Wide selection of Patriot t-shirts, you name it. Some incredible designs have come out. It's really ridiculous how good the shirts are. What's even more ridiculous is how many variants and designs there are. Wearing these shirts is an adventure out in public. You'll meet so many like-minded people. It really is amazing. We got a bunch of dress shirts that are in now, a bunch of really cool shorts, a bunch of tank tops, a whole bunch of this new American Only line. It is all available at thealexjonesstore.com. And finally, they're getting ready to launch a full pharmacy online. They're already ready with it. They use the same. Ooh, look at that hat. That hat's really cool. I hadn't seen that yet. I didn't design that. That's awesome. Red, white, and blue hat with 1776.
we are launching through Bigly using the same backbone, the same system that the wellness company uses. So it's excellent service. A full online pharmacy at 1776 rx.health. But the first thing we're offering is ivermectin and mebendazole together, both known incredible anti-parasitics, from the little tiny ones up to the big ones, from big worms down to bacteria. All the bad ones flushes it out. Together, they're incredible. Ivermectin won a Nobel Prize for that. But these two together are incredible, and it's not just parasites. Do your own research. They don't want you to know about this. Look up mebendazole studies, or what is mebendazole associated with? What has mebendazole been found to knock out? Look it up for yourself. Mebendazole. Mebendazole. Mebendazole studies. And you can get both those in a combo together in one powerful pill. It's a great detox you should do, in my view, a few times a year. But talk to your physician, talk to your nurse, talk to your pharmacist. That's what you do when you go online to 1776rx.health. And a lot of the mebendazole and ivermectin out there is adulterated or watered down if you get it off, you know, Amazon or whatever. This is certified pharmaceutical, highest grade. You owe it to yourself and your family, and it supports the broadcast, and it keeps us on the air. So 1776rx.health, thank you so much for your support. You're crazy if you don't take this product and see what results you get. So many people have parasites and don't know it. So many other people have other issues and don't know it. This is something that's so good for your body, something everybody should do. I know I do it. 1776rx.health. Just 1776rx.health. Take action now. Thank you so much for your support. And the sale is extended until tomorrow night at midnight, up to 50% off at thealexjonesstore.com. Bunch of big sales there right now. Now, I want to bring in Harrison Smith here and put some bookends on the spiraling Iran war that even the New York Times, the Washington Post, and Financial Times admit, and Army websites, I mean, the Army Times, Military Times, is now a world war. Now, we've done this for a while, but the fact it's being admitted, it's huge. All these proxy wars that come out of it, the expansion of the war, you see it everywhere. And just the desperateness of putting brakes on this and being beaten over the head with billions of dollars of Israeli brainwashing money, trying to gaslight Americans into supporting this, but 80%+ don't support it. 60%+, almost 70% of Republicans don't support it. I mean, so it's not that we're even dumb. It's that we don't control Congress because of AIPAC and other issues. This is insane. And Israel is destroying its name in the world, but they don't care. Trump is destroying the Republican Party's chances in the midterms, but they're still moving forward. Everything we've warned of is here, Harris. And I hate to say we're vindicated, but I point that out for the people listening to us when we warn of what's coming next if this isn't turned around. Global depression, total war, national draft, mass starvation. I mean, this is just insane, Harrison.
Yeah, well, and it's not exactly like it was hard to predict. I mean, this was all kind of obvious, almost inevitable the way that things were going. I mean, it was something like 2 days after the initial attack on February 28th, and I went live and I said, I think this is probably the biggest mistake anybody's ever made. And I really don't think I was over exaggerating it. I mean, from the disaster of the, economic fallout that's going to be coming, I mean, we've only started to see the effects of this already from what's already been done. Fallout's going to be horrible, and they just keep going. And I've got like two headlines that sort of tell the whole story right here, right? Trump says Iran talks to begin today, right? August 3rd. Meanwhile, Iran denies negotiations with U.S. after Trump announces talks for Monday afternoon. It's complete madness. Nobody knows what the hell is going on. Nothing, is being done successfully on the American side. We seem to just be digging the hole deeper and deeper. I remember my parents telling me as a little kid, if you're, digging a hole, stop digging. Like at a certain point, just stop digging. You can't dig your way out of the problem that you've dug your way into. And that seems where we are now. I don't think it's a coincidence that you have Ceuta, popping up on, the world stage at the same time that you have the Cezanne Island and the Albanian, catastrophe at the same time that you have, like Michael Yon always says that, this is about roots and resources. Oh, we're having some crazy glitches there. Let me figure that out. But yeah, it's as bad as it could have possibly ever been, and it seems to only be getting worse, which is maybe a little bit oxymoronic, but that's where we're at this point. And, I was just thinking about this because we laid out last week that, you know, is Israel really behind the invasion of the Spanish enclaves in Africa, which, again, the whole claims about that are absurd, unless you also want to say Alaska belongs to Canada or Russia and Hawaii belongs to Japan. I mean, just because a nation has possessions that are not geographically connected to it, I mean, these are absurd claims. Oh, it's in Africa, therefore it should belong to Morocco. I mean, this is ridiculous. And everybody knows it's ridiculous, but it's the excuse needed. And that's the other thing about the Israeli money flowing in is I don't think they're actually trying to convince anybody, because they're not really convincing anybody. It's not really working. If they wanted to, you know, actually improve their reputation worldwide, they have to change their actions. Their, you know, the rhetoric isn't enough to overcome the absurd actions out of Israel for so long. So really what they're doing is they're just sort of playing the long game. They're buying up TikTok. They're buying up CBS. They're buying up more and more, you know, intellectual properties and outlets so that they can tell their story. So, you know, they're going to do it no matter what. Nobody wanted this Iran war at the beginning. Nobody wants it now. Nobody wanted World War I or World War II. Guess what? We did it anyway because the people at the top wanted it. And sure, they'll spread their propaganda to try to get the American people on board. But in reality, it's about creating the false impression of manufactured consent. If they can just put across the perspective that everybody is behind this, then they can, you know, forestall any like major reaction to their actions. So I don't think the money being spent by Israel is actually helping them convince anybody. It's just sort of helping them drip feed out lies that will later be leaned on. You know, in history, they'll look back and say, well, everybody was, you know, happy with war in Iran. Everybody, all of America got together to fight this evil enemy. And they'll look back and reference articles being written right now and posts being made right now that are completely, you know, disconnected from reality, but help to tell the narrative. And so really, I think the thing to understand is like, you were at war. There is a war against you. Every American is in this war. And I used to say it about you all the time, Alex, that, you know, because people would ask, they'd go, well, you know, Alex, do you really believe everything they say? And I would say, well, yeah, basically, yes. But, and look, it can sound crazy when you got a guy, you know, running around screaming at the top of his lungs, like the bombs are falling. But once the bombs start landing, you go, oh, that guy wasn't crazy. He was, if anything, a little bit too calm. He should have been more, you know, aggressive in getting this message out. That's how I feel we are now. We're at war. I actually did a long episode on Friday, just, and it started here on the show going, it feels like I'm in the Blitz. It feels like I'm in Britain, in London during the Blitz. And I'm going, guys, I think we're at war with Germany. Bombs keep falling. Houses keep blowing up. I think we're at war with Germany and we should respond. And everybody goes, well, that's germophobic of you. How dare you hate Germans like that? Or, you know, each bombing is treated as an individual. You know, it can't be expected. Maybe the pilot mental problems.
We can't even get, I mean, look, 80+% of Americans are against the war. So overall, we have gotten them to be awake, or they are awake. But they don't understand that the war's, it's not just they're against a war over there that they know is pointless and that we're probably not going to win, and that's for Israel. It's that we're the targets. The world economy is the target of this by BlackRock and the globalists. Israel's a big component wanting greater Israel. They have the big lobby, but that's their end of the deal. For the globalists, they want this world depression. And they want America to end up failing in this war in the end, to discredit us and to kill Trump's earlier plan, because Trump did have a different plan. Trump was doing a bunch of good. That's why I was a wild-eyed supporter his first 4 months. Then we saw the Epstein cover up. Then we saw, you know, now they pulled Movino off and stopped basically the accelerated deportations. You know, now they're blaming the head of DHS for that when really it's Trump. You know, that's another thing Trump does. He orders all this stuff. And then Cash Patel and Bongino and the rest of them, who I'm not defending, but they shouldn't get the main blame. It's Trump. This is Trump. This is what Trump wants. This is what Trump's doing. And again, his daughter's so disconnected. She gets up months ago and says, oh, we got a $4 billion island with the Rothschilds from Albania. We met on the yacht and got it from the prime minister. And we're building an airport and took this coastline. They put up fences and kick people off their national coastline, which is the biggest refuge for flamingos in Europe. And then people go, we don't want you to take our land. They go, we're not taking your land. It's a conspiracy theory. So millions rise up. I mean, do they realize how hated they are? And it's the same Rothschild that's in all the emails with Epstein talking about stuff, Nat Rothschild. I mean, literally, there's 3,000 plus bunkers, underground railways, and a giant underground base, 3,000 plus bunkers, 3,300 bunkers in the second biggest Russian nuke base in the world, and the Trumps are turning it into a luxury secret compound for elites. And it just so happens to be on that strait coming out of Albania by Italy.
Yeah.
And then you've got Israel's. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, no, by the way, Israel already owns a bunch of land on the boot of Italy. If you go look into that, they already have like compounds there. So they already have one side. They have the left side. Now they're trying to get the right side on Sazan Island. Yeah. It's all about controlling these routes.
I mean, folks, you got to give Israel credit and their billionaire leaders. I mean, they are taking over Argentina. They've taken over the U.S. They're just taking everything over and just pushing us all aside and laughing at us.
And
their ministers go on TV and admit they're doing all this. We play clips of them and we're bad. And, you know, it's absolutely insane. Like, I remember the Abraham Accords. I remember last year the making deals with the Arabs saying you can control Spanish areas. And I remember seeing that, but I forgot about it. And then like last Thursday, listeners are like, why aren't you pointing out that Israel was behind this? And I went, I forgot. And like, why aren't you pointing out the State Department told them 2 months ago, do this, and gave him $40 million in a bill that passed. And I went, God, there it is. I every time it's Israel. I mean, they're accusing me of going and trying to make it Israel every time. And I'm just like, are you kidding me?
You can't avoid it. And I don't know what to do, Alex, because this seems to be our choice. You either have like an insane communist that literally wants to flood his country with migrants and is just mad that they're doing it so obviously, or you have, you know, the Israeli slaves and the Republican Party or the conservative parties throughout Europe who seem to do everything they can for Israel. And it's like, how did we get left with these two choices? Where is that third option that just goes, we want to defend Spanish sovereignty for Spanish reasons? It doesn't exist.
Well, it's the same way with we're not for Mondami and the Muslim Alliance. I don't want to blow up Israel. I don't want to kill the Jews. At the same time, I don't want Israel running my life.
Yep.
So then the right wingers, the fake right wingers are like, oh, you love the Muslims. You're for the Muslims. And I'm like, Israel's helping Al-Qaeda. The U.S. is helping Al-Qaeda. Israel's helping Muslim uprisings in Africa. I'm not involved in this. I'm just sitting here trying to be a moral good person and not be part of your global domination game. Coming up, I want to get into a new John Bound report. The Axon is the new flock.
Yep.
And it gets into all these cameras going up, which is what I've been pointing out to everybody for months and months. I'm glad you care about Flock. But you have to understand, it's Ring, it's Axon. People go, oh, you're covering up Flock. No, I'm covering the whole thing. The Google assistants, the Alexas in your house. Your car is watching and listening to you. Your phone is the big one. And so we need big picture here and take that awareness about Flock. Keep on that. But also move on to all the other stuff. So there's a John Bound report on this coming up. We'll play it next.
There's a massive sale going on right now at thealexjonesstore.com. Huge. Ultimate summer sale. 50% off Ultimate Power, Freedom Mango, and Patriot Punch. Methylene Red capsules. This is a proprietary product. It would take an hour to get into Ultra Methylene Red. The capsules are now in. Mind-fueled nootropic energy shots, all 50% off. 40% off zeolite tincture, detoxifying, upper spike protein, and it's good for your whole body getting heavy metals out. Methylene blue tincture, 40% off. CMOS gummies, 40% off. Shilajit gummies, 40% off. Methylene blue gummies, 40% off. Ultimate chill, and a whole bunch of other big discounts as well. 30% off all apparel. The widest selection of Patriot shirts of every different design, configuration. It is the widest selection. It's over 800 different shirts. It's ridiculous. The new line that I designed is, I think, pretty good. Rebel scum since 1776. The Betsy Ross flag, less 1984, more 1776 in muscle shirts. A whole bunch of other really cool stuff now at thealexjonesstore.com. I love this lightweight so-called dress shirt, but it's a very special type of shirt from a great manufacturer. We now have the boxer shorts, and they're not boxer-like underwear. You know, the classic boxer shorts that aren't long and aren't short. They're just kind of medium. They're my favorite type. I picked these out. I picked the brand. I said, this is the type of short I like. We're adding a lot of new apparel at thealexjonesstore.com. And every order right now, and it's about to end in the next few days, gets a free mystery T-shirt. You just put your size in, you get a free mystery T-shirt with every order that's $29 or more at thealexjonesstore.com. That is a hell of a deal right now. We've got the silver collectible 250-year anniversary with the amazing Jerusalem cross. Those are going to be gone soon. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And you stand with us, and you know that all the great work we're doing is because of you. You are the reason we're here. You are the InfoWar. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Is flock safety eavesdropping on private citizens? In this case, this flock raven is literally under the eave of a private residence. How close? I'm now touching the sill of this house, standing next to the raven.
The community center said, okay, well, we're a little worried that there might be some sort of anti-Semitic attack, so we want to share our footage with police in case they need it, in case there's a shooting or something terrible happens. And by doing that, they shared it with Flock. All Flock employees, over 1,000 times, and they were all grown men. And they were looking at these cameras at the daycare center, the children's gymnastics room. And their defense to this was that it was a product demo for another client. And I'm thinking to myself, if I had a business and I wanted a Flock camera by a police department and somebody pulled up a laptop and said, look how good this works, and then it was a children's gymnastics room, I would call the police, or hit them. I'm not sure what I would do, but that's an outrageous explanation. That's just delusional.
How many Flock employees were fired after that?
None. Not one.
If they're going to track us, that's against our constitutional rights. You know, I have the right to move about this country free without somebody looking over my shoulder constantly.
Flock Safety's solar-powered license plate readers have blanketed America like a digital dragnet, scanning tens of billions of plates a month, feeding hot lists to cops and private HOAs, and turning every street corner into a permanent checkpoint. The backlash is real. Dozens of cities have ditched the contracts after privacy scandals.
For many, Flock cameras are supposed to make communities safer. But after three officers allegedly abused the system for personal reasons, some residents are questioning whether the technology has enough safeguards.
If they're able to use it for all these other reasons, like tracking people, either they need a new company that has protections on the gear to where you can't do all that stuff, or there needs to be some checks and balances on it.
False alerts that put innocent drivers at gunpoint.
Turn, get out on the ground, do now. You're going to get bit. You're in the car. Fuck. Man, for real? That's what you want. Huh? Oh, that thing, man.
Behind your back.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, he's already asking for medical like a little... little petulant child.
So it's not the play. Well, it's not the stolen play.
No. Did it just mishit?
I think it mishit.
How you make that go away?
We'll talk later.
Hey, face away from me now!
Right now, man, we got a hit on car and a stolen vehicle. So you're about to cooperate with us?
I'll cooperate, but I trust you.
You have any weapons on you?
No.
Turn around. I gotta put you in these for right now, okay?
I've got a baby in the car.
So we have a Flock camera system that's around East Tennessee. We got a hit from that Flock camera.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so L0DUY, not LODUY.
Unauthorized federal data grabs and that creeping sense that your every commute is being logged for the permanent record.
Well, guys, Flock just got wings. Those street side cameras that are already all across America. What if I told you they're not stopping there? The same company behind the cameras are now putting autonomous surveillance drones in the sky. And depending on who you ask, it's either the future of public safety or the more likely option, the biggest expansion of government surveillance we've seen yet. Now the company's automated license plate readers have spread across the country, creating one of the nation's largest interconnected video surveillance networks. After partnering with aviation software company Aerodome, Flock launched Flock Alpha, an autonomous police drone built to respond to emergencies before officers even arrive. The drone sits inside a waterproof docking station waiting for a call, and when a 911 report comes in, the drone can launch automatically and fly up to 60 miles per hour. Officers don't even have to be standing nearby. They can deploy it directly from one of these little things, a smartphone. And this thing isn't just flying overhead. It's got thermal imaging, high-definition cameras, and powerful optical zoom. And well, according to Flock, it can even read a vehicle's license plate from 2,000 feet away. That's not terrifying at all.
But instead of the surveillance layer being torn down, it's being rebranded. Axon, the taser and body cam giant, has stormed into the gap with its own pole-mounted and streetlight retrofit ALPR systems, the same hardware partners Flock used.
Guess who else owns Axon? That's right. According to financial disclosures, the president purchased between $1 and $5 million of Axon stock.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with my decision, and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but benzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search benzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
News, analysis, reports. It's the Alex Jones Show.
Sweet dreams are made of these. Who am I to disagree?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today, though he may be popping back in from time to time as he just can't, the man can't take a break. Man cannot go on vacation, but how could you at a time like this when everything seems to be coming to a head and the future of the world is being decided right before us? Of course, you just saw that great video from John Bowne that, of course, is on X, and you can find and share it on any of our accounts, of course, at AJN Live. I'm at Harrison H. Smith. Follow at Real Alex Jones. And, of course, you can go to alexjoneslive.com to find all of the feeds as well. We have just a ton of news still to get to today on all the topics that Alex has mentioned and more. And, you know, on the topic of Sweta, however you pronounce it, I believe it's Sweta. That's how I'm going to say it, at least. I thought this post by, which I guess is Banksy? I don't know if this is the artist Banksy or not, but on X, I guess it's a Spanish guy. 800 years to drive them out. 12 hours to get them back. I think that sort of sums it up, doesn't it? The Spanish spent 800 years doing the Reconquista, winning back their land foot by foot, sword fight by sword fight. 800 years to drive out the Muslims, 12 hours for them to rush back in. And there were rumors, and I haven't really seemed to confirmed, have not seen it confirmed anywhere, but there were rumors that the Moroccan president basically released around 3,000 criminals out of his jails, and those were at least a part of the massive crowd that stormed into Ceuta. And yes, as Alex pointed out, they're still there. They're actually like setting up their own ad hoc government, basically, where, you know, the more political migrants are basically, you know, organizing gangs and running around assaulting people. Again, we've got video after video of the Spanish people there basically just being like, what the hell is going on? You know, videos of people trapped inside buildings and not able to leave because of the mobs of rioters outside and the Spanish authorities doing absolutely nothing to stop it. But then you have pictures like this. Morocco literally emptied out its jails, released all of its rapists and murderers, put them in trucks and dropped them off in Spain. And from one of the broadcasts, you can actually see, if we go to DotCam here, and actually if you want to pull up the actual tweet, you can see it a lot better than in the printed version. But this guy, his arms are covered in scars because he's been whipped. An arm full of whip marks from being in some Moroccan jail for who knows what aberrations, but they'll send it to you as a poor migrant boy. And so, yeah, some of these people are not just, you know, literal criminals, but they bear the scars of the, you know, physical punishment they've been subjected to for whatever horrific crime they've committed against people in their home country. Now they are recruited as soldiers against Spain. Again, we know that this is from the beginning, a exercise of Israeli imperialism, really in a lot of ways, basically pressuring it. And we explained this on Friday, but just to reiterate, essentially this is a diplomatic pressure move. These, Spanish enclaves, exclaves, they call them, where you have Spanish possessions in Africa, which again, that doesn't mean colonialism necessarily, unless you want to say, you know, Alaska actually belongs to the Russians because we colonized it. Yeah, there you can see the scars even better. Yeah. But it's these, you know, Spanish enclaves that have been Spanish for, you know, out of living memory. And yet, you know, Morocco wants them. They want to take them. They want to at least be able to send migrants there. It is a diplomatic situation for Spain and has been for a while, but it was never really in danger. It never really, like the Spanish, it was never a hot button issue that the Spanish government had to, you know, spend resources dealing with. It wasn't really an issue. It was just like there were some Moroccans that wanted it back and there was kind of nothing they could do to get it. Then Spain refused to, you know, allow America to use its bases and also criticize Israel's ongoing genocide against Gaza. And so to get them to stop doing that, they looked around and they said, okay, let's find a pressure point that we can press. Let's find a vulnerability that the Spanish government has that we can sort of lean on and press and, you know, apply pressure to. So then we can turn around and go, oh, you don't want us to flood your country with all these migrants? Well, then why don't you stop calling out Israel's genocide? Why don't you allow us to use your bases? Then this whole problem can go away. So it wasn't exactly manufactured from whole cloth by Israel. It's not like Israel came up with this idea to try to go after these enclaves, these exclaves of Malila, however you pronounce it, and Ceuta, however you pronounce that. They didn't create the problem, but they are exacerbating it. They are creating a diplomatic crisis so that they can lean on them and say, well, we can help you clean this up. We can help you fix this up. You just have to do what we want. And what they really want is Spain to be actively involved in the military action in the Middle East. Because if Spain is actively involved, if they're providing weapons and providing launching platforms for attacks to go on, then they have no standing to bring cases against Israel in the International Criminal Court or to back up places like South Africa that were, you know, claiming that they were committing a genocide and brought them to that international court, which is what happened last year. Earlier this year, Spain was actually one of the nations that was on the side of South Africa in trying to use the international rules-based order to bring Israel to heel. This is no small part what is behind America then using our incredible power, our incredible leverage, our incredible wealth for the benefit of Israel to force Spain to give them concessions diplomatically. So it's a little bit more complicated than just it's the Jews. Like I see a lot of people on X just sort of boiling it down to the, you know, elementary and therefore not correct view of just like, it's just Jews sending Muslims to Europe like they always do. Which, okay, there's a little bit of truth. There's a little bit of truth to that. There's a very, very large amount of truth to that. But it is only in context of much larger, you know, various forms of warfare going on. It fits in to the worldwide attack that's now happening. In fact, there was a senator, I believe, commenting on the situation and saying, you know, America shouldn't, and he was right, and he's, you know, reflecting a criticism of the Trump administration's activity when it comes to Morocco. And he's saying, you know, basically, it's not right that the American government is helping a non-Western country take over a Western country. And my response to that is, well, what's he talking about? Is he talking about America pressuring Spain to give up its territory to Morocco? Or is he talking about America pressuring Lebanon to give up its terrain to Israel? Because when you actually look at the fundamental, foundational, the moral underpinnings of these nations, Israel is no more or less alien to the West than Islam is. And like you, this to me is the thing to really understand, is this whole concept of Israel being the West is manufactured, created on purpose by Israelis to trick Westerners into fighting for them. Like it's really not all that complicated. It's just a lie. It's just an abject lie. And you can tell how abject and ridiculous this lie is because the talking points coming out of the Israeli Hasbara, you know, think tanks, they're, you know, brilliant rhetoric practicers, is basically completely contradictory and incoherent. They're saying that Israel is the West. It's the front lines of the West. It embodies the West just as much, if not more at this point, than places like England does, right? England, sure, it's the birthplace of everything that we've come to recognize as the West, but, you know, it's basically been taken over by Muslims now. So really, Israel is the front line. Israel is the West, and it embodies the West. At the same time, they tell you that Europe has a history replete with anti-Semitism. And how many times have you heard some variation of the claim anti-Semitism is in their DNA? I mean, that's like a common refrain, is that like there's something about the European DNA that it just has this poison, this defect that can be suppressed if you're, you know, brutal and, you know, efficient enough in controlling communications. You can suppress that cancer at the heart of the European soul. But if you don't, you know, crack down on it enough, then it bubbles up and it's meaningless. It's pointless. It has no, you know, basis in reality. It's just some sort of a DNA defect that is expressed in the European people. Now, you tell me how Europe, i.e. the West, i.e. Christendom, can simultaneously find its greatest expression in Israel, but also be tainted forever, poisoned, every aspect of it with an ingrained, inbuilt, congenital anti-Semitism. This is nonsense. It makes no sense. This is ridiculous. How could both of these things be true? They can't. So what is the fact? The fact is neither one of them is true. The fact is Israel is not the West. It does not behave like the West, does not have the same morals or character as the West, does not have the same beliefs as the quote-unquote West in any way, shape, or form. The West doesn't believe in collective punishment. The West doesn't believe punishing the children for the sins of the father. The West believes in a contained sort of national warfare where two nations go to war with each other and then they sign peace agreements and then they get back to some stability, you know, between, if not allies, at least not open enemies. Israel believes in an ongoing, perpetual, forever war against anybody it doesn't actively control. When you really boil down what it is to be the West, it's Christendom. It's, and that's what it used to be called. And again, I can't help but see a little bit of a psyop in all of these words, right? I remember being a little kid and hearing the word Caucasian and being like, what the hell does that mean? Where is Caucasus? Where the hell? It's a mountain range? Okay, so Asians are from Asia. Africa is full of Africans, but Europe is full of Caucasians. What the hell is that supposed to be? No, it's Europeans. They're European. But it, like, you've got to understand how for a century or more, there have been these little linguistic tricks, these little, you know, rhetorical manipulations that go on, little seeds planted that might not, you know, might not be overwhelming at first, right? To hear European people referred to as Caucasian doesn't automatically make you think that the people of Europe never existed and that their nationalism is a lie. But over time, that's the idea that's seeded, that these people, the Caucasians, they must be sort of uprooted. They're all from like some mountainous region in Eastern Europe, but somehow they spread everywhere. No, they're European. It's not that complicated. Just like the West, it doesn't mean the West. It means the people of Europe, which used to be called Christendom because Christianity is tied, you know, indissolvably to the European character. It was Europe that adopted Christianity and spread Christianity. Sure, it started in the Middle East, but even back then, the Middle East was, you know, demographically a very different place than it is now, as Alex was pointing out. I mean, it's not a joke. And people can take this too far, and they can take it to sort of the like Nazi level, whatever they call, like social evolution, whatever it is, where, you know, basically the appearance of white people in ancient cultures was seen as some sort of evidence of, you know, race mastery or whatever else. But, you know, putting that to the side, putting the uncomfortable conclusions to the side, this was one of the things I talked about when it came to something like the Odyssey. The Spartans were known for being blonde-haired. Like, you look at the vases, and it's a bunch of blonde-haired ladies running around. That's what they were famous for. Just like the Spaniards were blonde hair and red-haired, blue-eyed, just like the Northern Europeans, especially, you know, after the the influx of the Germans after the fall of the Roman Empire. I mean, do you know that Ramses the Great was a white guy? Like, do people know that the greatest pharaoh of all time, Ramses the Great, like, they have his mummy? It's not speculation. It's not like they're looking at ancient carvings and trying to divine the racial makeup. We've got his preserved body. He's got red hair. They've tested it. He's a Western European person. So again, this idea, the reason I say this again is because there's a concerted, deliberate, decades-long effort to basically eradicate white people, not just in their homelands, but throughout history, so that you could claim that everything, you know, Western Europe accomplished was somehow stolen from people that weren't white in order to give rise to and give credit to and justification for the anti-white activity of people who are trying to destroy us, which, again, I'm glad that people are waking up to their, like, we've gone through steps, right? When I was growing up, it was anathema. It was shocking and horrible to even question the government line. I mean, even in people now, like people who I know who are, heck, even maybe farther than me down the conspiracy rabbit hole, like growing up, you know, if you said 9/11 was an inside job, you were like politely asked to leave. Like, it was not a good thing to even question the government, you know, let alone believe that they were in fact the progenitors and the people who started all of these horrible things. Merely questioning it was bad enough. Now, luckily, and thanks in no small part to Donald Trump shattering the, you know, illusion of mainstream media objectivity or anything else, people realize, they learn, they come around to the fact that the government lies to them, that they're tricked into states of panic. Now, whether people can actually, you know, absorb that and then turn that into, you know, I remember being shocked at the time. We just lived through Russiagate and all the crap that we'd been through with President Trump. And then COVID hits, and I'm expecting everybody to go, this is another one of those tricks. We've been through these before. We saw Russiagate. We saw 9/11. We saw all this crap get sold to us. We're not falling for it again. But of course people fall for it again, because of course that's the beauty of a false flag attack. The only thing false about it is the flag. The attack is real. You have to actually defend against it. So in the case of Ceuta or the wider Muslim invasion of Europe, it's like, okay, you can point out that it's NGOs that are orchestrating it, that the wars that were started for the sake of Israel are the whole reason that these huge populations of quote unquote refugees exist in the first place. You can describe the, you know, ignition of this process. You still have to stop the Muslims coming in. You still have to stop the people that are in Europe from arming themselves or gaining political power and enforcing their beliefs on an unwilling populace. You can't just point to the people in the NGOs that sent them over. You have to deal with the problem on the ground. This, again, is the, from the perpetrators, beauty of false flags attack. The attack is real. People have to respond to it. You just then get to manipulate and decide where that response goes and how that response is enacted. Again, I could tie this to things like the flock cameras, problem, reaction, solution. They open the border. They defund the police. They, you know, make it, you know, they inject racialism into our jury pool so that, you know, people are let off. So you have a corresponding rise in crime. We presented the chart last week that showed, you know, all the big cities in Texas. Austin alone has had our homicide rate increase 74%, while every other big city in Texas has seen their city decrease its homicide rate in the exact same time period. Why? Because the choices made by the, trying not to say retarded, but I'm blanking on any other word, so I'll just say socialist leadership of Austin, the choices they made lead directly to a rise in crime. What's the solution to that? How about permanent perpetual surveillance cameras on every corner? Why would we need that? Why would that be necessary? The problem is that you destroyed the judicial system, that you destroyed and, you know, demoralized the police, that you allowed George Soros to spend millions of dollars to plant a DA who refuses to charge minority populations with the crimes they commit. That's the problem. The solution is fixing that. The solution is not creating a digital panopticon that surveils you 24/7 so that we can just have, what, high definition footage of the crimes that keep getting committed. Like, that's essentially where we're headed. Is you're going to have flock cameras on every corner. You're going to have fully realized three-dimensional surveillance of every square foot of your city. And the criminals that are running around beating people over the head with baseball bats or stabbing people on the subway trains are still going to be let out time and time again. They're still going to have rap sheets 45 cases long because it was never a question of finding evidence to convict them. It's been a question for the last decade of the systems in place to bring about justice being used instead to serve racial justice or social justice, which are not justice in the same way that turkey bacon ain't bacon. You can call it that, but it's something entirely different. And justice is when a criminal is punished for the crime they commit. Racial justice is when you don't punish that criminal because 200 years ago, somebody that looks kind of like him was maybe mistreated by somebody that looks kind of like his victim. This is absurd, but this is the world that we're entering into. And I'm going to cover that a lot today, too, because you thought Ma'am Donnie was bad. Good Lord, folks, I don't know what we do at this point. I've got a video of the mayor of Seattle almost breaking into tears as she's questioned about her choices by the media there. There's a woman running for governor of Michigan or something who is just, long story short, there are like young socialist revolutionaries who have never had a job, who don't have families, who have never been in charge of anything in their lives, who are literally actors and actresses, just like AOC. If you remember, AOC was chosen, was selected out of a lineup like an actress trying for a part. I'm sorry, let me correct that. She was an actress trying for, not like one. She was literally a bartender who just looked pretty and could spout the socialist talking points. And she did so unashamedly. Like in interviews early on in her career, they would say, what do you think about this? She'd go, I don't know. I've never thought about that. I'll have to ask my people what our stance is on that. It's like, okay, so you're just an empty vessel. You're just an empty vessel that somebody decided could win an election, so they put a little bow on your head and are feeding you talking points through your earpiece. That's our modern politics, and it wouldn't be an issue if we didn't flood our country with tens of millions of people that aren't American and don't have the same beliefs we do, who see voting as just robbery with one step removed. I'm going to vote for the person that promises to rob the other people and feed me rather than rob me and feed the other people. Like, that's how they perceive elections. And again, folks, you've got to see this for what it is. You've got to be able to recognize that other populations, people see it as a criticism because they inherently recognize that our system is superior. So when I talk about our differences between our system and other systems, it's obvious, even in the people who think I'm bad for pointing it out, the deficiencies in their systems, but they still defend them. But this is just the fact, and we've played the videos, we've shown, it's everywhere, because they're not shy about it. People in India, if they want to get elected, they drive around in cars throwing cash out the windows. There's nothing wrong with that to them. To us, we would see that as just, cynical buying of votes, just like betraying the idea of democracy when you're just running around going, hey, vote for me, I'll give you $100. We would see that as, a violation of the underpinning of our entire system, that this is not the way this is supposed to work. This is corruption manifest. But to people overseas, it's like, well, that guy gave me the most money. He's obviously the one who's going to be best at being in charge. If he is the one with the most money, if he's the one that is most able to benefit me, then why would I not vote for him? Like, I've had these conversations with people where I'm like, you get that it's bad that your politicians just hand out cash in exchange for money. And they're like, why? Why? You don't get paid for your vote. I do get paid for mine. Who's the real sucker here? Okay, that's a difference in mindset that is insurmountable. When you bring those people over and they vote in that same way, it literally destroys our system. Or you have people that are literally just too dumb and incapable to understand second-order effects. And so they're electing literal children. We basically might as well have like 8-year-olds running our country. I'm not even exaggerating. I'll show you clips on the other side. This Wong woman in Michigan is literally insane. It's like been to the mental hospital a whole bunch. She's running for governor. The mayor in Seattle, I'll show you that as well. Stay tuned. We're being taken over by children.
I'll tell you something right now that is one of the most, if not the most important things I've ever talked about on air. And I want you to really listen to me. And I want you to get a pen and paper out of your iPhone, out of your Droid, and type this into your notes. And I want you at lunch today or tonight or right now to just go to any search engine you want and type in two different names, two different words, okay? Two different drugs. that have won Nobel Prizes, you name it, that people don't want you to know about. And one of those is ivermectin that everybody knows about. The other one that most people still don't know about is mebendazole. If you do the research, then it's important to understand that you need to get it from a pharmacy. You need to get it from a doctor. And we have a sponsor, and that's, of course, Bigley. And they went and they used the same service as, you know, the big web, RXs, and great people we've used that have been sponsors in the past. But this is Bigley doing it. And the key is it's real, it's pharmaceutical, and it is a very low price. People are selling knockoffs of it online without a prescription, and a lot of it's fake or a lot of it's watered down and adulterated. Because I did a regimen a couple years ago of mebendazole. We'll put that on screen. That's how you spell it right there. Mebendazole. And it didn't have any effect. I bought it off of Amazon. And then I did more research, and they said most of that stuff's fake. So I went and I got it from a doctor, and it was incredible. And my own medical doctor owns clinics all over the state of Texas had already been pushing it on me for years, and I just never done it. Ladies and gentlemen, you can get the two in a combo, the ivermectin and the mebendazole together, and they work synergistically together. It is certified and known, both of them, as incredible anti-parasite. Just search the term ivermectin, mebendazole, and just put in study and do your own research and see what the system has been suppressing about this. And this is something, in my view, talk to your physician, and when you go to the website, it's, you know, online pharmacy, and they've got nurses, doctors, all of it. And then you get the prescription. It's very, very easy to do. And I would recommend to talk to your doctors, my own personal opinion. What I do for myself is twice a year, I take a regimen of ivermectin and mebendazole. And it is incredible. People ask why I look so young while I'm healthy. Well, it's a cocktail of things. It's the ivermectin. It's the mebendazole that I take about twice a year as a regimen. Some people, my medical doctor says, take a little bit of ivermectin every week, but I tend to forget to do that. He's literally just says take like two pills a week as a supplemental. That's what my medical doctor tells me. You get your own medical doctor to tell you what you want. But the big thing they say is a couple times a year, a big dose, a big regimen. You talk to your physicians. You talk to the folks in the online pharmacy. Let me put it on screen for you. 1776RX, just 1776RX.health. This is one of the most important things you'll ever do, ladies and gentlemen. And despite the system trying to suppress this information, it's getting out everywhere. So do your own research. This is revolutionary. This is so important. 1776, just the numbers. 1776RX.health. Those are the coordinates, and it's a win-win to fund our operation and what we're doing. Take action now. The most important decision you'll ever make, 1776RX.health, and get your ivermectin, mebendazole right now, ladies and gentlemen. But whatever you do, go to the AlexShowStore.com. These are incredible products. All these things work. They'll have sexy names. IRCMOS, Shilajit, bovine colostrum. Oh, research bovine colostrum and then find out we have the best. Oh, research IRCMOS. We have the best. Research Shilajit. We have the best. We just bring you things the bad guys don't want you to know about at TheAlexShowStore.com and, of course, at 1776RX.health. Take action now. Thank you so much for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Live from Austin, Texas, you're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The Alex Jones Show. We'll be joined next hour by Larry Sanger. He's one of the co-founders of Wikipedia. Talk to him about sort of what I was hinting at in the last segment. What do you do? What do you do when your population doesn't care about being taken over? When your fellow Americans with a vote that counts equal to yours genuinely lacks the intellectual capability to even understand the choices that they're making? That does actually seem to be the situation that's happening here. And I've got a couple of examples to show you, both the damage already being done and the damage to come. That is the socialist idiot children that are being elected to high offices in America already wreaking havoc on the states and cities that they're in charge of, but also the people still running for this, as the DSA is on an upswing at this point and is increasing its popularity. And with every race it wins, it, you know, is able to take that and make hay with it and tell everybody how successful it is. It's, you know, this is the way Democratic politics works. You can take your victories and spin them into more victories by putting out the idea that, you know, your ideas are popular. It brings more people over. I mean, this really is a popularity contest at the end of the day. And they've rigged the system by making everyone stupid. I really think they've made everyone too stupid for us to be a democracy anymore. I mean, I think that's it. I think you, like, if you really want to get down to the issue, if you had a smart, informed, you know, well-read population that understood not just the laws that are in place, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, but the reason behind those. Which, again, I think we've failed in this. People know that we have freedom of speech. Do you know why? People will invoke the Fifth Amendment. Do you know why it exists and for what reason it was created? Because it sure as hell wasn't created so a government agent could get away with using his authority and power in the government to destroy the lives of American people. But that's exactly how it was invoked last week with Anthony Fauci. This, you know, it was about stopping the overreach of the government. It was about preventing a situation where the government was imprisoning people just because they didn't like their points of view, or, you know, forcing them to give evidence against themselves in show trials because they had seen that in places like England. And we still see it today in places like America. It hasn't done a perfect job of correcting everything, but there was a reason that it was put in place. Now, to use that protection from the citizens against the government, the government is now using it for protection of the crimes it committed against the people. This is all wrong. This is all completely wrong. So what do you do when you have a population that doesn't care about the truth, that doesn't care about what's right? Because, you know, Fauci might be the best preeminent, you know, most shocking example. As I keep saying, we didn't fall for the lies. Why are the people that fell for his lies the ones defending him? It doesn't make any sense. And this never really made sense. I guess these people have a part of their brain that I'm missing or something. The sheep part, whatever the sheep part of the brain is. But I was having this conversation back in 2022, 2023, because people were like so confused at why I was criticizing Fauci. And I was so confused at why they were defending Fauci. Who the hell is this guy? What is he, your dad? Like, why are you so defensive of him? He's just some dude. He's some government bureaucrat. You have no loyalty to him. You've never heard of this guy before 2 days ago. But all of a sudden, it's like, I'm a bad person. I'm an evil person for daring to point out this guy is lying. It's crazy. It's been crazy for a while. The loyalty, the like worship that they show towards Anthony Fauci, it's senseless. It's unmoored. It's no sense. There's no sense in it, actually. But this has been the case for a while. It's like Anthony Fauci was lying. We were pointing it out and people were just like, how dare you? He is an amazing public servant that's trying everything he can to save lives. And it's like, why do you think that? What evidence is there that that's the case? Genuinely, what the hell is wrong with you people? You're defending a man who used your loyalty to him, your trust in him, to screw you knowingly. He didn't do it, better safe than sorry, right? That was always the excuse of like, hey, look, you know, the lockdowns may have had negative consequences, but at the time, we didn't know what we were dealing with. We had to do it because, hey, what if it was like as dangerous as, you know, aerosoled Ebola and it would kill 90% of people who got it? We didn't know. So better safe than sorry. We had to lock down. And sure, if we could go back down with the time machine, maybe we wouldn't have. But at the time, it was the right choice. No, it was never the right choice. He lied to you. He lied. He knew exactly how deadly it was. He went on TV and said it was 10 times as deadly because he wanted to create fear in you to take advantage of you. And these people who fell for the lies, who now can't help but acknowledge that they were lies, and yet they still call you a bad person for criticizing Dr. Anthony Fauci. This, again, just goes into this poisonous mindset that is at this moment hollowing out America like a cancer, replacing all of the healthy functional cells with cancerous ones. From Zero Hedge, is anybody ever going to say I'm sorry? I'm not even going to read the article. Let me answer. No. The answer is no. Here's the cool thing about justice. You don't need them to say they're sorry. This is, again, what I don't understand. We operate at a status that's like we have to have them say they're sorry. Why do we have to have them? You know what will make them sorry? Is when they're sitting in a jail cell. They'll be really sorry once they are put in a jail cell. And guess what? You don't have to wait for them to say they're sorry before you do that. This genuinely blows my mind. Because even just the title of this, is anybody ever going to say they're sorry? No, they're not. That's the answer. You ever watch cop shows? You ever watch like Cops or any sort of like true crime stuff on YouTube? Do the criminals ever apologize? Is there ever a moment, ever, in any of these cases? I mean, you can have somebody, they're like on video murdering somebody. They're caught so bad. They go to trial. They try to represent themselves. It's humiliation upon humiliation. Literally nobody in the world thinks this person is innocent. Nobody in the world. Even their own lawyers are like, I'm just doing a job here, buddy. Nobody believes them. And yet, do they apologize? Do they go, look, fine, all right, you know, I really tried to get away with it, but you guys are sharp and you caught me really good. You caught me really bad and I'm sorry. I feel stupid now. They never ever, that is not in the human, like, if they're the type of person that will do that, then they're not the type of person to commit the murder or to carry on the worldwide scheme to enslave humanity. The people that we're dealing with are criminals. They're not going to say they're sorry, and we shouldn't expect them to, and we don't have to wait for them to say they're sorry. You make them sorry by punishing them. Hello? Hello? This is called civilization. This is how it's always worked. You don't wait for the criminals to say they're sorry, because they never will. It blows my mind. This week, Dr. Anthony Fauci appeared before Congress and, on the advice of his attorney, repeatedly invoked the Fifth Amendment rather than answering many of the senator's questions. Everyone's talking about what he did or didn't know, whether he misled Congress, whether he should have answered the questions, or whether he should be held accountable. But that wasn't the moment from this week I can't stop thinking about. My husband called me as he was driving home from picking up grain for the hogs. He had stopped at Restaurant Depot to grab pizza boxes and a few supplies for the ranch. Rarely does he pay attention to American politics. Rarely is he interested in the stories that consume him. He simply asked, what's going on with Fauci? I explained that he'd spent some of the hearing invoking the Fifth Amendment rather than answering the senator's questions. There was a long pause. Then he asked me something that caught me completely off guard. Is anybody ever going to say, I'm sorry, I was wrong, it cost you and your family everything? No. No. It's never going to happen. It doesn't need to happen. I feel like there are a few certain things that, you know, there's a question that went semi-viral on X that I've just been thinking about, and it put it as like, you know, if you could have access to the emergency signal system on people's phones, you know, if you had 1 minute, you could make everybody in America listen to like 1 minute of audio. What would that audio be? What would, you know, to change the world to whatever it would be? The couple things I think we all need to understand to fully comprehend. One is white people are the target, that white people are slated for eradication, and that you're not a good person to allow this to happen. That being attacked does not make you a good person. To be a sucker and a victim is not a virtue. I really wish people would get that in their heads, because it is an inverted, bizarro form of white supremacy where non-white people can be flooding into your country by the millions going, we are going to kill you. We're going to cut your throat. We are going to take you over. We are going to destroy you. And white people look at it and go, oh, they need help. Oh, no, we'll be fine. What, defend ourselves from these people? We don't need to do that. We need to give them whatever we have, because, you know, they clearly don't know what's going on. And it's like, what the hell is, what, you think you're invincible? You think you're a god? You think you're immortal? You think this can't affect you? You think you're just, things are going to be great forever because you're white? Like, get over yourselves. You're under attack. That'd be the first thing that I wish I could just hammer into people's heads. White people especially, you are under attack. What the hell is wrong with you? Because it wouldn't be an issue if white people would just not allow themselves to be taken over. But regardless, and this is what I was talking about in the last segment, where it's like we've taken these steps, right? People understand now the government will lie to you. People understand the government will actually be engaged in like horrible crimes against you and get away with it. Something that was anathema, that was unspeakable 15, 20 years ago is now readily accepted by almost everybody you could possibly meet. I'm not supposed to. Let's just keep it vague here and point out that nobody these days is being sued for questioning the supposed grief of people who've had their family members die in public ways. Nobody's getting sued for saying we don't believe their grief. This looks a little bit fake to us. Nobody's getting sued for that these days. Here, 14 years after other incidents, which were not able to be questioned so much. Like, people are questioning things. People recognize now there's nothing wrong with questioning things. There's nothing wrong with investigating the truth behind claims of the government. Great. That's a great step. The next step is recognizing that all of these attacks have exactly the same character, the same motivation, and the same outcome, destruction of white people. That we got to get over, because everything I deal with is false dichotomies. Everything I deal with is you're either for Muslim or you're for Israel. You either are an egalitarian, self-hating, you know, white person that wants the global majority to overwhelm and destroy Europeans, or you are a literal Nazi that wants to step on the neck of every non-white person to prove your superiority. It's like, how about we don't have to be insane? How about every stance everybody takes is always insane these days? What if we had a sane approach that was just like, white people don't deserve to die? And also, don't have like a civilizational obligation to be in charge of everything all the time. How about we're just like everybody else? Would that be a stance that everybody could come along with? No, obviously not. You either have to be a Nazi or you have to be AOC. This is ridiculous. You have to be Mamdani or you have to be Adolf Hitler. Why is this constantly the dichotomy? It is okay, in fact, to be white. It's actually great and you should be proud of yourself. But that's just one. That's one thing I wish people to understand. The other thing I really, 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 really wish that we could get across, especially to Republicans and libertarians especially, is liberty requires peace. Okay? You're not at liberty if you're under threat. Okay? I pointed this out last year. One of the great things Trump actually did in his second administration was sending federal police forces into places like Atlanta and Memphis, where the crime was astronomical and not being dealt with. So the feds went in and just arrested the criminals they knew were out there, knew where they were, just weren't arresting them. The feds actually did arrest them. And you had videos of people in Memphis saying, this is amazing. The streets are so safe. My children can now play in our own backyard without having me, you know, fear that they're going to get shot. It's like, okay, if you can't play in your own backyard, are you free? If you can't walk down to the corner store after dusk and purchase something and walk back, if you can't send your kid to the corner store, pick up some, you know, an ingredient you need for dinner without just thinking there's a 50% chance kid just never comes back again. Are you free? Are you a free person? Of course not. So freedom, liberty requires peace. Peace requires order. Order requires good people, good men to do violence to bad people. Okay, again, and this is why I'm going off on this when it comes to, like, why is nobody apologizing? Because they're bad people that are evil and have to be defeated. Like, it's not that complicated. It should go like this. You did something bad. We all know it. You know it. Will you apologize? If they're like, oh, well, I just think that, then you just go, okay, into the cage. Goodbye. Goodbye. Into the cage now. Into the concrete box forever. We're done with you. You can't live here anymore. We need decent people who are honest to run a country, and you're incompatible with that. So you go away now forever. That's the solution. The solution is not to beg them to admit that they did something wrong, or to have a really powerful speech about how they did something wrong while they smirk at you knowing that they're getting away with it. This isn't solving anything. Solving something would be throwing them in prison forever because of the crimes that we know they committed. Why can't we just, let's do that? Okay. No, we have to ask and we have to beg them to admit what they did wrong. Then and only then can we actually get justice. Ridiculous. This is ridiculous. And then you get to something like this from today. Scientists, the experts, the scientists say we need to have the Earth's population to just 4 billion to save the planet. Okay. So they're just coming right out with it now. They want to kill half the planet. They're saying for the planet to survive, you know, the giant ball of rock in space, that's going to die if we don't kill half of the people on it, according to them. Of course, what do you think their suggestions are? Do you think it has anything to do with maybe no longer providing sustenance to nations that have birth rates in the, you know, 700%, like every woman gives birth to like 7 to 9 children on average, but their GDP is $2 a year. Do you want to stop feeding them? No, absolutely not. I'm a horrible person for even suggesting it. Okay, then what's your suggestion? Kill the productive people in the first world countries? Why is that better? How could that possibly be better? Here's an idea. Let's, what if we applied sort of the same idea of representation to human survival that we do to like Hollywood films? In other words, you know, white people are only like 7% of the planet. So what if white people have absolute protection from any form of, you know, enforced deaths? Everybody else has to be degraded till we're all equal, till white people and everybody else are exactly the same percentage. Wouldn't that be fair? Is that fair? Because we want total equality, right? Across the races, across the nationalities? Of course not. It might sound like the evil plan of a nefarious villain, but scientists say we now need to have Earth's population to save the planet. It might literally be the plot of like every incredibly popular piece of media recently, with the likes of Thanos just straight up word for word having this position. But scientists believe it now. Like that doesn't actually discredit it at all. Like that but should like qualify the first part, right? I might seem like a crazy person running around the parking lot screaming, but that guy's coming after me with a knife. Okay, well now that first part, which did make you sound crazy, is qualified by that second part, which makes the first part sound okay again. So something like this would be, scientists say we need to have the Earth's planet to 4 billion to save the planet, but that's because if we don't do that, the population will be reduced to less than 1 billion, you know. Then maybe you can make an, they're not even making that argument. They're like, sure, it sounds like Darth Vader himself and the Emperor got together to come up with the most evil plan of all time, but we think it's a good plan. What? That's not a qualifier. That doesn't change the first part of the sentence. You're just saying, yeah, this is evil, but we want to do it though. But actually, we're evil too. So there's that. Over the past 100 years, the population has ballooned from less than 2 billion to 8.3 billion people. However, researchers say our planet cannot sustain this explosive growth for much longer. Now, in a proposal that will remind movie fans of Thanos' plot in Avengers: Infinity War, scientists argue that the population needs to be eased down to 4 billion by 2200, by 2200. I don't even know how to say that year. I just, you know, I guess I'm glad they're coming out and saying it now. I just think we should believe them when they say this. You know, it's kind of like what Alex was saying about the flock cameras. Yes, the flock cameras didn't exist when Trump was elected. Like, as of Election Day, November 2024, there wasn't a single flock camera on the streets of America. Since then, they've exploded everywhere. They're being rolled out faster than you could ever cut them down, right? That's just happening. People don't want it, but it is happening, just like the data centers. Nobody wants the data centers in their backyard. The data centers aren't necessary, but the people in power want them. So they're happening, and they're being funded by your tax dollars. And your life is inconsequential. The effects it has on your life are not an area of concern for the people building these things. But it didn't start with this. It started with things like Ring cameras and Amazon creating a, you know, government portal so that police departments could have direct access to lifetime feeds of every Ring camera. We reported on this at the time. So, I mean, they didn't start with flock cameras. They started with, hey, here's a really convenient doorbell camera that will keep your family safe. Oh, look, it turns out we accidentally built the digital panopticon. We better add license plate readers and signal readers to that as well so we can track your every move. Again, just think, why would these things be necessary? They're not necessary to deal with crime. You saw that in places like El Salvador that went from having the worst murder rate in the world to one of the best violent crime rates in the world. They did it without flock cameras. They did it by getting rid of the judges that kept letting criminals out. That's what we need to do to, you know, get rid of all of the illegal immigrants. I have stats here that I'll find in just a second about Operation Wetback in the 1950s, the biggest deportation effort. I was going to say up till now, but Now it's still bigger. It was still bigger in the 1950s. And the entire budget for that operation, they got over a million people out. It was like 700 people and 35 trucks. It was like not a lot of people. Right now, ICE has like 200,000 employees, and we're deporting less than they did in the 1950s. It's not a matter of we don't have the flock cameras. It's not a matter of we don't have the panopticon surveillance grid necessary to do this. It's not necessary. We could do it. They're choosing not to, and then they're using the problem that they're choosing not to solve as an excuse to build another problem that they're going to use against us. It's, again, really just not complicated, even in the slightest. And we're going to talk about all this and more as we continue, especially as we talk to Larry Sanger in the next hour. But when it comes to the illegal immigrants, sticking on that for a minute, it's the idea of ICE. 900,000 legal immigrants have been naturalized over the last 12 months, while fewer than 800,000 illegal immigrants have been deported since Trump took office. Now, add that to the stat that we learned last week, that there have been more anchor babies born in the United States than deportations. There have been more anchor babies born in America than deportations since Trump got into office. So it's like you just take one of these. More anchor babies born than deportations, we're at a net negative for America. Net positive for immigration. Then you compound that with the fact that there have been more naturalized legal citizens than deportations. And it's like deportations are not only not happening fast enough, insufficient to deal with the problem, we're actually still growing in legal and illegal immigrant population. We're not even close to that being a negative flow. The people in power could easily fix this. I mean, do you guys remember how easy it was for Trump to close the border? Something else that, like, it just sort of happened. Nobody, like, comments or focuses on it. But for 4 years, we were told that the border couldn't be closed, that we needed to pass a bill. They were blaming Trump, saying Trump argued against this bill. If that bill passed, then they would have shut down the border. He shut down the border in one day. You know what he did? He went, shut the border. And then it was shut. Literally everything we deal with is that simple. Everything. Deport illegal immigrants. They would be deported. Shut the border. It would be shut. We're choosing not to. And we're not taking the obvious, you know, easy way to do any of this stuff. We instead are choosing to be lost, to be drowning in this whirlpool of chaos and misery when the solution is right in front of us. Instead, we're being told the solution is what? Socialism. It's got to be communism, right? I mean, things are so bad. Communism's got to be the only answer, right? How about we just try for once enforcing existing law? It's the only thing America needs to exist. Enforce existing law. Everything would be solved.
Earth, filter your water. Stop turning my frog friends gay. This I command.
The Alex Jones Store.com. Fight the globalist takeover now.
A scarlet martini before breakfast? You minx. Are you trying to outdo me in corruption? Or shall we make it a team effort?
Of course not, darling. This is Methylene Red from the AlexJonesStore.com.
The Ultra Methylene Red, madame. Bold, refined, and unapologetically potent. It optimizes cellular energy at the deepest level, delivers razor-sharp cognition, and ignites a warm, invigorating rush that spread through every vein.
This sword has tasted blood, and it will taste more.
Attack! If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Hundreds of U.S. troop casualties have taken place in the war with Iran. Serious injuries, even deaths, that until now have been covered up and hidden from the public. And it's only out tonight because of a Freedom of Information Act request. New Defense Department records show tonight that more than 400 casualties in the first 6 weeks of this war alone, including 17 life-threatening injuries. By the way, casualties is defined as people who are killed, injured, or lost during a war. The Army took the worst of it, over 270 wounded, and the most common injury by far wasn't shrapnel or broken bones, it was head trauma. Some of the ugliest days never even made it to the public. Get this, CENTCOM only releases monthly totals as they quietly sat on 70 casualties logged in a single day back in March. Now, fast forward, since Trump ended the ceasefire this month, according to documents, there have been more than 200 additional casualties, and four more deaths have piled up. And remember, right around that same time, the official death toll got quietly revised down from 18 to 14. Look, accounting can shrink a number on a spreadsheet, right? But they do not change what's happening on the ground. That's the fact that there are real bodies and real families who deserve a straight answer about which number is true. And tonight, while American troops are absorbing that toll, Iran is rearming. Reuters reports that Iran is set to receive up to 400 Chinese-made shoulder-fired missile systems in a $60 to $70 million deal, with the first shipments arriving within weeks. These are the precise weapon sales that President Trump claimed that Xi Jinping personally told him China would never make, quote, under any circumstances. Well, China isn't even hiding where it stands. Just 4 days ago, Beijing said, quote, it strongly supports Iran in safeguarding its sovereignty, security, and national dignity. So if, in fact, there was a promise, and we don't know that there was, it doesn't seem to be holding. Although we have to point out tonight that China has not confirmed this arms deal, and Reuters, well, candidly, they get a lot wrong. It's also not just missiles. Reuters also reports that Yemen's Houthis are now considering charging a fee on every commercial ship that sails through the Bab el-Mandeb Strait. Every country's ships, that is, except one, China's fleet, would be exempt. Now put that together. Chinese missiles flowing into Iran, Chinese ships sailing through a strait that everyone else would have to pay to cross. It doesn't sound like coincidence here, right? That sounds like a partnership. And while that's developing, the war itself just keeps spreading. Here's the latest footage out of Egypt. Crews still working to put out a fire on a U.S.-owned floating platform after a drone strike there. Initial reports point to Iran. And just like that, American infrastructure is on fire in a country that has not been part of this conflict so far. That alone tells you how far this thing is starting to spread. Look, it comes hours after this president lost composure talking about Iran. Here's what President Trump told Fox News' Trey Yingst in response.
President Trump tells Fox News about Iran, we are going to beat the effing S out of them. He went on to say, we'll be hitting them hard. They're going to get a beating.
Again, that is the commander-in-chief on the record describing how he'll respond to an attack on American troops. Not a strategy, not an objective, just rage at this point. But here is something worth sitting with, at least for a second. Why is this attack being called a surprise at all? See, CENTCOM said on Tuesday that Iran's Revolutionary Guard had directed more than 30 drone attacks on U.S. forces in the preceding 3 days alone. 30 attacks in 72 hours. And we're calling the next one unexpected? That word is carrying a lot of weight tonight. It makes it sound like it was an ambush out of nowhere, right? No one saw this coming. And yet, we are at an active war with Iran. That's not to say Iran is right or wrong here, but how many times has the U.S. struck Iran? Have those all been sneak attacks, surprise attacks? Because the language here is bizarre. Now, as for that retaliation, for the first time in this war, Saudi Arabia joined the United States in strikes, hitting Iranian-aligned militias inside of Iraq, following what's being described as an attempted ambush on U.S. forces. In fact, here's some of the video from the aftermath of those strikes. What that means is that this is no longer just a U.S.-Iran fight. Saudi Arabia is now striking targets alongside American forces, and Iraq, whose territory this happened on, is saying they're not staying quiet. In fact, Baghdad condemned the strike as a violation of its own sovereignty, rejecting the use of Iraqi soil to launch operations against its neighbors. So, look, the host government is publicly objecting to what's happening within its own borders.
All right, folks, that is the great Ben Swan on his report on the undercounting of casualties of the Iran war. You got to follow him. Search Ben Swan on X. He does great work and has for a while. Stay with us. Quick commercial break. We'll be back on the other side with founder of Wikipedia, Larry Sanger. Don't go anywhere, folks. Big interview coming right up.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with, my decision, and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but benzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search benzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
Discover trends and global developments years before they happen, right here on The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today, who's on vacation. I'm very happy to be here, however, because I get the privilege of interviewing Larry Sanger. Lawrence Sanger is a American philosopher and internet project developer who co-founded Wikipedia. After proposing the use of wiki software for Newpedia, he named and helped launch Wikipedia, drafting core policies like neutral point of view that have sort of gone to the wayside ever since then. He later advocated for expert-led knowledge curation through projects like Encyclosphere, citing concerns about Wikipedia's lack of oversight. Sanger holds a PhD in philosophy from Ohio State University. You can follow him on X at L Sanger. And his website, LarrySanger.org. Mr. Sanger, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. I know you have a new project called WikiCritic that I really want to hear about. But also, I understand you've been blocked from any participation with Wikipedia. Well, I mean, how have you been ostracized from the worldwide phenomenon you helped create?
Yes. Well, basically, it's been about 5 or 6 weeks now, and it all began last year, actually, when I posted 9 theses on Wikipedia. It was a whole reform proposal, and without getting into the details of that, people didn't really take the initiative in putting the reform proposal into effect. So I decided I had to do that.
Right.
So I became active on Wikipedia, and I actually started organizing people in something called Wiki Project Intellectual Diversity, which is just like it sounds. It's just a collection of people that were going to push for greater openness and intellectual tolerance, essentially. It was going very well until I actually went to apply for official recognition of the Wiki project. And then the application was just absolutely flooded with a lot of people who before had not really said anything. And I was accused of canvassing, which is collecting people from off Wiki to participate in the Wiki project. But actually, that's something that's required, or at least strongly encouraged by the rules. But I think the idea was that because this Wiki project was a reform project and actually had a chance of working, they were really threatened by that. And what happened is I simply updated my ex feed, my followers, to say, well, there's a big controversy going on right now. This is fun. And for that, actually, I was taken to what's called the administrator's notice board. And they're basically excoriated for 3 days until finally they blocked me. And the funny thing is, that was like Monday, I think June 22nd. I think that's right. And that same day, I just happened to be in New York, a trip that had been planned for a long time, to accept an award along with other people from Tablet Magazine for founding Wikipedia and for actually making this effort to reform it.
Right.
And 2 hours later, I was blocked from Wikipedia.
Well,
so,
I mean, that's almost appropriate, isn't it? The arbitrariness with which they can manipulate the rules is very reflective of sort of the arbitrary nature of the facts that you can find on Wikipedia now. The one that jumps to mind is, wasn't it Marco Rubio said that Spanish, a cowboy culture was originally Spanish, and AOC came out and said, that's ridiculous, how dare you? I can't remember exactly how it went, but basically Wikipedia then changed to reflect the, you know, talking point of AOC, even though it had been, you know, in support of Rubio. So it's not really about facts for them. It's not really about what's true. It's about manipulating this to achieve certain political ends. So in a way, they're sort of acting just, you know, in line with their traditional behavior.
Yes. I think they were very threatened by the fact that I could actually succeed in reforming Wikipedia, and they couldn't have that because the reform that I would make is, you know, it's perfectly in line with the original vision of Wikipedia, which was have a wide variety of people coming together to develop articles that fairly reflect everybody's views. You know, it's not a conservative value, actually. It's actually more of a classical liberal value to let everybody have a say on an equal platform. They don't like that.
No, and in a weird way, that is a concern. I mean, that is like a far right wing value now, if you listen to, you know, the people in charge.
It seems to me.
So yeah, it's like, it's crazy for me, for them as liberals to give that up, since it seems like such a beautiful thing, but we'll take it, right? Okay. That's the far right position now, is everybody should have a say and that we should actually pursue the truth, even if it makes us uncomfortable. We're the only ones still saying that, and we've been saying it the entire time. So what were exactly the reforms that you wanted to put in place? What do you think is necessary to reform Wikipedia? Because I follow YouTube channels. I mean, there are entire YouTube channels that just focus on the drama behind the scenes at Wikipedia. People don't realize, because it's got sort of such a, you know, you don't really get an idea that there are personalities behind the right. articles and everything. But man, you look into it, there are entire civil wars going on behind the scenes.
Oh, yeah.
And people being banned and blocked and moderators. And I mean, it gets really crazy. People have no idea the behind the scenes stuff. So I wonder if it can be reformed with all the nonsense I've seen go on behind the scenes. Is reform the right, you know, way to approach it? I guess not anymore. I guess they've let you know loud and clear that it's not. But what were your ideas to reform it? And do you believe it can be reformed?
Yeah, those are different questions. Like, my ideas for reform include things like allow competing articles. So why should Wikipedia have only one article on each topic? Maybe at this point, if they're going to insist on what I call a GASP point of view, GASP meaning globalist, academic, secular, and progressive, right? And that really does describe the framework that Wikipedia acts in. Well, why not allow other kinds of frameworks? And this is not something that would be inconsistent with neutrality, but the very idea is that, you know, if you're like Indian or Chinese or you know, just French, and you approach a given topic like, I don't know, God or photosynthesis or whatever, your approach might be different, you know, in a certain again, framework is the idea. Why not have competing articles is one idea. Another thing is that you may not know this. A lot of people don't know this, but 85% of the most powerful accounts on Wikipedia are anonymous. We have no idea who they are. And it's at least 85. It might be more than that. They might be using pseudonyms. That just strikes me as bizarre. And it seems to me that if you take certain kinds of authority on the platform, you accept certain ability to, for example, make people administrators, then the world has a right to know who you are, essentially. You know, if you're making really important decisions about what is arguably the most influential single information resource of its kind, probably more influential than any newspaper or news outlet. Well, we know who runs those. We know who the reporters and the researchers and so forth, those outlets are. We have no idea who really runs Wikipedia.
That is bizarre. And you're not just saying anonymity is bad, but like these people in particular, the outsized influence they have, the powers that they have, they want to exercise those, but they really want to pay no cost for it. They want to be sort of unquestionable and be able to hide behind their anonymity, which I think there's a trade-off there. If you want to have that power, I agree. People should be able to know who you are so they can at least judge for themselves in a critical way what may be motivating your perspective on certain issues. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. And another one is Wikipedia has never really opened up Wikipedia articles to rating. Well, why not? Hmm. We can rate YouTube videos. We can thumb up X comments and so forth, Reddit posts and so forth. Why not Wikipedia articles? There's no good answer that they can offer to that. And it really is important in the case of Wikipedia articles. You know, if there's some article that is just not up to snuff in the opinion, especially of experts, right? People who make it their lives, you know, mission to know something about some narrow corner of the world, we should be able to find out easily what they think about the article, right?
Yeah.
I was looking, for example, recently at an article about a topic in philosophy called Unmoved Mover. It's a topic from Aristotle. And an AI that I developed gave it a grade of C. Not very good. Right. And you would have no, and I actually gave it a lower, because this is something I know something about.
Right.
I gave it a lower grade. And we have no way of knowing which are the better articles and which are the worse articles on Wikipedia. Wikipedia claims to be helping the public, but it's not helping the public discern which are the better articles and which are the worse.
I wonder if there could be, because I've been very surprised, pleasantly surprised at the effectiveness of community notes on X, because, you know, we always were very resistant to the fact-checking programs that came about right after Donald Trump got elected, all these, you know, newspaper outlets and everything. Well, we're going to fact-check, and it was always just whatever their view was, you know, an argument for that and against the other one. Community notes, I was kind of unsure, how is this going to be any different? But it's been very good, and I've really had no problems with community notes. Occasionally there's one that I'm like, it's kind of an opinion, not a fact. And, you know, but then you can downvote it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, something like that, I think X has proven that community notes function works very well for sort of discrediting lies. It's really good. I mean, I wonder if something like that could work.
I think so. I can tell you what I've been working on along Please. Those lines. So, it's called WikiCritic. Now, I don't know if it's going to be ultimately launched. Right now, it's experimental. And we've got like a dozen beta testers right now. But I really like the way it works. The idea is if you can put a review of a Wikipedia article almost anywhere, like on X or your blog or lots of places, and then we have an AI agent, which will go out and grab the text and put it on a dossier about the Wikipedia article. And then, in addition, the AI will itself come up with a set of grades for the article. And I think, especially if we get people to install, like, a plugin for their browsers, if that's possible, and have that running when they're using Wikipedia, then they'll actually be able to see grades for the articles. So we can go around the Wikipedia administrators. It is possible. But we have to take some things into our own hands. Can't just like passively consume information. So that's one idea anyway.
Yeah, that's interesting. I remember, Gab did that at one point, because there was again the phenomenon after 2016 where all these media sites stopped having comment sections. It used to be a place where, you know, you'd read the Daily Mail article, you'd go about them, and there were no more comment sections. I remember Gab and some other people put together a thing where it's just going to be the comment. Whatever page you're on, there will be a dedicated comment section on our server, so they can't shut it down. I always thought that was brilliant, but it never really caught on. Maybe with Wikipedia, it'll be more sort of direct and focused on Wikipedia, which will make it easier for people to utilize. How is AI affecting this? Because again, AI is this thing that it's pitched as, and it's seen in many cases it works as sort of a truth calculator, right? It just sort of spits out the truth. You spit in the input, it gives you the output. It's a computer, but we know it gives you different answers every time. It's referencing things that it can't really judge whether it's legitimate or not. How is AI affecting Wikipedia these days? And you know, I have a picture somewhere in here. It's not exactly the same as what we're talking about, but, people are asking AI, can you make a sign saying F Israel? And it said no. And then it said F United States. And it said yes. Now, of course, this has to do with the geopolitical establishment and all that stuff, but it points out that AI is being given guardrails that are not advertised, that are secretive, that are invisible really, but are affecting the output. So how is that affecting Wikipedia?
There's a lot to unpack there. I think that it's starting to eat into Wikipedia's traffic, right? So, I actually looked at the traffic from, I think it was May of 2024 to, May of 2025. And in that period, there was a significant decline. I hope I've got the dates right. And there's been a decline, I know, for the last 7 months, by about, I want to say 10%.
That's sizable.
I can't vouch for that, but it's significant, and it's enough that it might not be statistical noise. And it comes at a time when people are using AI to get questions answered. Right. And I know I use AI now when I earlier might have used an encyclopedia, maybe not Wikipedia, but the trouble is the AI itself is trained on Wikipedia articles.
Right.
And so it's not like Wikipedia doesn't matter anymore. It still matters a lot, because it's used in training AI. We know that ChatGPT was an earlier version. We know that Grokopedia was written with the help of Wikipedia. That's very clear. So it's hard to say, you know, if we can simply ignore Wikipedia. I don't think we can anymore. I don't think that AI is going to displace it. What LLMs do is they essentially make averages to, this is a very crude way of describing it, but basically averages of the data that it is fed. And it just so happens that Wikipedia has information at just the right level that fits the answers that people are looking for. There can be more specialized websites that go into details here and there. But Wikipedia is sort of pitched it right at the level that we use to interact with an LLM.
Yeah.
So, I do think that Grokopedia has a chance, but I have the impression, I can't tell you all that I know, but let's just say that I have the impression that the project may have been abandoned to some extent. I don't know. I really don't know. But it's kind of looking that way. They have stopped supporting human interaction with it. You can't post corrections anymore.
Well, I wonder, have you had any discussions with Elon Musk about this? Because that is what keeps popping into my mind is, you know, to me, the greatest use of Grok ever is that it's got that little button on X, where if you see something you don't understand or something you think you may be questionable, you just hit that Grok button and it sort of gives you, you know, a summary of what it says and what, you know, how truthful it is. It's so useful. We have a Grok button on Wikipedia. I mean, that sounds like a good sort of merger of Wiki and Critic. And of course, Grokopedia was, you know, meant to be a competitor for Wikipedia. Elon Musk, I would think, would be sort of, you know, barking up your tree and trying to work with you. Have you had any connection with him?
Well, let's just say I have had his ear, at least in my, the announcement of Grokopedia came the day after I unleashed my 9 theses, which was a great surprise to me. And I can talk at him, but he doesn't talk back. Let's just put it that way. I don't know what he's listening to be honest.
Wow.
He's a very busy guy, obviously.
Well, yeah, of course. It seems like the tools that he's, applied to X are very much in line with what you're trying to do with Wikipedia. It's interesting that there's not communicated. It seems like there should be. If our listeners want to tweet at Elon, tell him maybe we could use his help on getting Wikipedia back on track, because it still serves. I mean, it's the go-to. I probably referenced it twice today, just, you know, searching stuff, historical stuff, especially if I'm looking up Ceuta. You know, what is Ceuta? This enclave that's being, you know, I go to Wikipedia and it gives me the history. So, I mean, it is still such a useful tool, but you don't know where it's biased and where it's not. Like I pointed out, the Vaquero, and, you know, it changes the history. If you know Wikipedia, you can sort of see, okay, this has been edited recently. How has it been edited? But for the average user, they just read it, they accept it, they go home. So again, like AI, if this is being manipulated with a bias, we deserve to know. And if we don't know, then we're going to be wrong.
Yep. I actually think the answer ultimately has to be that people have to talk back to Wikipedia. And the problem has been that there is whenever you've got a big constituency, I've discovered, you know, that all think the same way. It just is the natural thought of us old, you know, internet website developers, entrepreneurs, whatever, is okay, start a website, get these people organized. But things are so locked down to a great extent that actually starting a significant new voice is really difficult. So I hope that WikiCritic will serve that purpose. And I really do hope, you know, we can get Alex, for example, to write a response to his article on Wikipedia. And I know I've already got a whole bunch of people lined up, basically ready to talk back to Wikipedia, and they can put it on their personal websites. We will just go and grab it, you know, and aggregate it all.
So, you know, we got to go to commercial break here. We'll be back on the other side with Larry Singer. Just how can people find WikiCritic if they want to be involved? Is it possible for them to become beta testers?
It has not been launched yet.
Closed down.
It has not been launched yet. What you were showing on the screen there was just a mock-up.
A preview.
It'll give you a taste.
Okay.
Yeah, LarrySanger.org/WikiCritic.
LarrySanger.org is the URL. We'll be back on the other side with Larry Singer. Don't go anywhere, folks. This is the information war. The front lines, folks. We'll be right back.
And a microscopic tag being planted in a person's body to track his every movement. There's actual discussion about that.
And often they're things you don't know what to do with. UBOs, they're called unidentified bright objects.
Can brain scans be used to determine whether a person is inclined toward criminality or violent behavior? Who's got the brain that's going to be most susceptible to a particular kind of manipulation?
So the point is, they've been obsessed with this. It's going on. The COVID shots implanted the matrix, graphene oxide to grow. It's now being scanned. It's now being read. They were putting chips in the troops 30 years ago. The revolution's already here is what you're saying, Jesse Beltran.
These are just chips on a size that you can no longer see. They're nano size. One's 2,000 times the width of a human hair. The graphene oxide, the silicon-based materials that have been in, we know for a fact that they were in the mRNA. We know that Dr. Ido Bachelet signed a contract with Pfizer in 2015 when he did that TEDMed talk with a trillion robots in a 1cc syringe, and how he teaches his students how to, once they're in a host, how to control them with RF emissions.
And you heard Collins saying 21 years ago that, oh, yeah, when we're doing scans, we find all these chips, these bright objects, ha, 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 wonder who put them there. But as you said, you've been doing this 20 years, and about 10 years ago, you began to go away, not seeing chips anymore, but just liquid emulsion nanotech. Here you are 6 months ago or more scanning me. Let's go to Alex Jones getting scanned.
So if you put that camera in there, you see how it says probably silicone? That means it's an electronic component. And it's not unusual to find that in the posterior ear area.
So wait, I got a higher reading than him?
No, his was higher than yours.
Okay,
yeah.
Yes,
yeah, but you did get a positive reading there. So you are getting the you know, base of the neck is what we typically see. Scapula area. What we're finding is after post-COVID, this is very typical. We're completely bombarded by this stuff.
From your own research, there are compounds naturally in nature that just do absolutely incredible things that will draw out these type of things. But you guys have come up with one with scientists that adds these special sea minerals in that then even drags it out even more. And so I have been taking this, the dreams I've had, my skin, my health. What it's done is absolutely insane. Get masterpiece.com. Matt Hazen, tell us what this does, and people can get 10% off when they follow the URL, getmasterpiece.com, or use promo code Alex when you're there on the site, because this is really special.
Zeolite is an incredible mineral that is known as what's called the master binder. And what that means is it's known to pick up every type of forever chemical, toxin, toxic heavy metal there is, including fluoride. So when you see charcoal or carbon or clays for binders, you don't see that they will pick up fluoride. Zeolite's different. Zeolite also gets the fluoride. That's a very big deal. It is great at removing these environmental toxins from our body. Masterpiece is the highest grade sea mineral plasma solution. It is basically isotonic, the same mineral composition as your blood plasma. So the sea minerals are being carried in by the nanometer, sub-nanometer size clinoptilolite zeolite. And once the toxin hits the zeolite, it releases and displaces the mineral. People don't feel bad. There's no normal detoxing reaction.
Everybody needs to go to getmasterpiece.com. You get 10% off by using that URL automatically when you go. There's promo code Alex as well. Getmasterpiece.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Alex Jones Show, because there is a war on for your mind.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show, AlexJonesLive.com. Of course, support us by going to TheAlexJonesStore.com. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex Jones today, joined by Larry Sanger. You can go to LarrySanger.org to find what he's working on, including things like WikiCritic, the new effort he's made to bring some honesty and truth to Wikipedia. It's severely lacking there these days. Of course, you can follow him on X at L Sanger. You know, Wikipedia in its digital form is just naturally vulnerable to manipulation, right? I mean, there's something when you print an encyclopedia and it's sitting on the shelf It ain't changing. That's what it may be wrong. It may be right, but you can go back and reference it. With Wikipedia, you go to an article today, it can be completely different tomorrow, and there's no real alert saying here's what's been changed. And this, of course, leads to things like you can go to, you know, AI destroying books, destroying all these old books and incorporating them into AI. And it's like we're entering into a world where permanence is a thing of the past. Ironically, permanence is a thing of the past. And this just it sort of unmoors us from reality and allows manipulation to be utilized in really egregious ways. How do we contend with that?
There's some technical tools that can be used. At a certain point, in order to distinguish what people say from the confabulations of AI, you actually have to use a digital signature of a person on a piece of content to prove that it is theirs. And we haven't done that enough. And as long as we continue to own our own digital identities, I'm all in favor of that. So that's one of the things that can be done. Now, I'd actually push back a little bit on something that you said about the history of Wikipedia, that Wikipedia does have the entire page history, the whole revision history. And it's fascinating. It's to be honest, actually, I'm a little surprised that they haven't tried to lock it down a little bit more than they have, because it is quite revealing and damning in many cases when you dig into it. But with a lot of articles, you can actually look through the history and you can find all kinds of lines that are not available anymore. They have been oversighted, which is it's a verb. It just means that it's been deleted from the database permanently, apparently. Usually for legal reasons, no doubt, sometimes quite legitimately so, but not always, I think.
And it's not always obvious to the average user. They go, I mean, at least, you know, on some things you'll have a thing saying, oh, this has just been edited, here's the updated version, you know, on things like X and stuff. But Wikipedia, if you're not really well-versed in it, it's hard to find those logs where it changes and to go back through time. So for the average person, it just appears as though this is how it's always been.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And which is very misleading. Another technical solution. It's actually not that technical. You can go to justipedia.org, which is a fork of Wikipedia, made by a friend of mine and, Buddy Wills, and she has she's an older lady, but she has more energy than most 20 and 30 year old founders. She's a force of nature, and she's actually managed to create something that's really useful already. And you can freely edit Wikipedia articles so that they are made more neutral on Justipedia. And they're getting quite a bit of traffic, right? So that's a story that has not been covered. And I wish people did know more about Justipedia. Generally speaking, that's, as I think of it, that's part of what I call the encyclosphere, which is basically the collection of all the encyclopedias. Like the blogosphere is not just one blog, it's all the blogs. So the encyclosphere is all the encyclopedias. What we need to do, basically, is to promote all the alternatives to Wikipedia. And, in many cases, you know, if Wikipedia doesn't tell the truth, another one will, you know, there's a lot of information in the world.
And that's what I was getting at with my question in the first segment about, like, is it even worth it to reform Wikipedia, or should we just have another thing? We go, just leave Wikipedia behind. It'll wallow in its own biases all it wants, and we can go create something better. Is it worth it to reform it, or is it better just to try something new?
I would have agreed with you. I did agree with you for a long time. But now I actually, it's come to the point. It's been around for so long. It has not died. You know, the rumors of Wikipedia's death, impending doom began in like 2007. I remember there was some lawyer who said, yeah, by 2009, it won't even exist anymore. And of course, that was wrong. Basically, here's the deal. You can say, let's just ignore it. But here's the problem is you can ignore it, but it's not going to go away. And it's going to continue to have a lot of influence in the world. You know, Alex Jones viewers may not actually have any use for Wikipedia, I suppose, on average. But a lot of ordinary people still do, right? And, you know,
that's a place where it is. I mean,
we need to take the fight to Wikipedia.
We saw this right? with social media. I hate to keep bringing up Elon Musk, but it seems like you and he are sort of fighting the same monsters in a lot of different ways. But same thing with that, right? They created Parler and Gab, and there were all these other Truth Social and all these alternatives to X, but X is still the place to be, or, you know, Twitter at the time, that was the place to be. It was too big to ignore. You couldn't just ignore it. And even if your own thing that you created was successful, it would never really, you know, be a competitor. You know, except when something like TikTok came out and it was so different that it created a whole new category. With Wikipedia, it's not quite that easy. But again, I wonder what the effects of AI are going to be with this. And what is your take on the destroying of the books that places like Anthropic are involved in? Which, again, I want to remind people, the judge decided they could scan the books as long as they destroyed them, which is just insane. You know, they weren't saying we're going to destroy these books because we have to. The judge said, well, it's copyright infringement unless you destroy the book. So now they're buying up every old book they can get, destroying it, and then putting it into AI. And I guess it's, you know, we trust them to say what the contents were. I mean, that seems insane to me. Well, what's your take on that process?
I mean, I have not studied the legal reasoning. But my impression is that they're only supposed to have one copy or something like that, right?
Right.
In their possession.
Yeah.
But of course, the information in those books, which is like the important thing, is going to be in zillions of copies on everybody's, you know, screens.
It makes no sense. It makes no sense at all.
Yes, indeed. I think that this particular case, however, might not be as bad as people think, as long as these companies don't keep doing it. That's for sure. We want it stopped. But generally speaking, there aren't that many books that have so few copies that, you know, it's likely that the last copy was destroyed by the, you know,
consumed
machines.
Consumed by the machines.
Okay.
Well, yes. You know, it's just kind of weird because we're entering into this world where there's so much information. I mean, it's the information age, and yet everybody kind of seems dumber than they ever have been before. And it's, you know, at a certain point, it's like, do the facts even matter? I mean, it's like we can deliver the facts to you, but they don't seem to care. They don't seem to, it doesn't seem to actually affect them. I mean, yeah, book The Dumbest Generation. Tell us about this.
We've been talking about this for a long time, right? You know, I remember buying this book back in like, 2008 or something like that.
We've gotten dumber since then. There you go.
We've been complaining about that, you know, basically, cheap information, put into, bite-sized chunks, essentially, has taken the place of really understanding whole systems of thought, which are necessary to be able to deal with whole subjects in an intelligent manner.
Right.
I think the problem is because there is so much emphasis on video, on short communications, on quick and easy answers. Forget about kids. Even adults now are finding it harder and harder, or so they say, to read books. You know, I still read a lot of books. I'm reading several books at a time at any given time. But that's just me. You know, I'm an ex-academic but I think, you know, the rest of you got to get it on the ball here.
Seriously.
The reason why we read books and the reason why books continue to matter, even in an age of AI, is that books provide the sort of logical, meaning-driven scaffolding that we need to think through problems in a systematic way, right? And that is simply not given by ready answers. That just gives you facts. Right. This is an old talking point of teachers and philosophers alike, that essentially knowledge occurs in systems, and you cannot reduce what is learned when you read a book to a set of facts that it contains.
Right.
They actually have to be structured. You actually have to go through the thought process that the author went through.
Yeah, you know, I was actually just talking about this earlier in the show before you came on, because I saw this with Anthony Fauci and the Fifth Amendment. I thought people know what the Fifth Amendment is. I mean, you watch crime shows, every, you know, low-down criminal, they might not be able to spell their name, but they know they have a right to stay silent. Do they know why? Do they know what the purpose of that is? Why was it, you know, created in the first place, and what it's protecting us from? Because now you've got an agent of the government using the Fifth Amendment to shield his activities in the government. It's like, I think this is all wrong. So you sort of dislocate the idea of the Fifth Amendment from the structure that that actually informs it. Mm-hmm. And suddenly you're completely lost. You don't know why this thing exists or what the value of it is or when it should be used and when it shouldn't. So it's really almost worse than useless, and I see this everywhere. And this is hard. Yeah. We're in a democracy, and we got a bunch of people voting, and they don't even understand the first thing about the reason we have rights and the reason how they were created. I think you're exactly right. We need this systematic. I like how you put it. I'm gonna have to go back and quote that. The scaffolding, the intellectual scaffolding to understand this stuff is missing now, which is why it's sort of everything's topsy turvy.
Yep. There's a great example that I can give that sort of links this segment with the previous segment. So most people have no idea what due process is,
right,
but it's really important, right? The Fifth Amendment is one of the amendments that actually defines due process. Okay, so I'm going to give you a little lecture. Just bear with me. It's actually kind of fun and important. Due process is the set of rights that we have that basically define how we should be treated by the law. All right? So just for example, when we go into a court, there should be a difference between the prosecutor and the judge. The prosecutor shouldn't be the judge, just for example. And that's one of the things that's like required. Another thing is the judge shouldn't have like reasons to be biased, right? If there are things that would make a judge tend to judge the case in one direction rather than another, apart from the bare facts of the case, then that judge should be out. Now, I'm not going to go through all the rules, but there's a lot of them. You know, and they basically define what impartial justice, a process of impartial justice, looks like. Okay, now here's the thing. On Wikipedia, when I was taken before that administrator's notice board, it was just a mob of people talking about me, right?
Right.
You know, like bad mouthing me in front of my back and pulling out all kinds, saying all kinds of false things, not being really subject to any rules of decorum, not being answerable to anyone in particular. There was no charges. There were no charges in particular in my case.
Right.
I didn't find out why I could be blocked officially until I actually was blocked in the end. These are the reasons you were blocked. They didn't say that in advance, so I couldn't respond.
Right.
Okay. I was not guaranteed a right to reply. Right. Okay. So what's the point of all this? The point is, if these idiots, who staff Wikipedia, the administrators who staff the administrator's notice board, knew why due process rights are important, right? Like if they had been required to work through the answers, well, why is there this rule? Why is there that rule? Then they might actually be open to an argument to the effect that, you know what? This whole process is wrong and it needs to be reformed. And I actually told them that when the process was going on, and they said, this is not a courtroom. Well, obviously it's not a courtroom.
Right. But if they're leveling punishments, I mean, you know, there should be, and you know, I think back to the, you know, after January 6th, they had basically a show trial. And I remember being outraged going, they're making accusations, but not giving the accused a right to reply. This is in total violation of our, you know, fundamental beliefs about what is fair in justice. So, I mean, you're seeing it obviously on the internet. I mean, people can make up the rules they want, but even in our politics, you know, you have things that are functionally, they look like courtrooms. They act like courtrooms. There's a guy with a hammer in it, but it's not a courtroom. It's something else. And people can't recognize that for some reason.
Right. They have to be made to read books probably when they're young, that explain all of these things and actually work through all the issues. It's kind of hard, you know, and certainly the leaders of society have to understand these things in their bones. It has to actually be part of a common education, not just some specialists.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course I've got, you know, in the last hour of the show, I'm going to play a lot of videos from some of the new socialist mayors that are coming up, and you know, whether it's Mamdani or this woman in Seattle, or there's a woman running for governor of Michigan, I believe now. And it's like these people, they have no experience. They think just because they sort of can put things in a clever way that means they're right. What I'm trying to get at is there is a lack of respect for like older generations that I see everywhere. And to me, that what provides part of the ability of these people to justify why they don't care about this stuff. They go, well, those are just old guys. They're old fusty guys, white supremacists, whatever. Why should we even care what they have to say? Which leads you to totally misunderstanding what the policies they were putting in place are, or why they were putting them into place. It has a lot to do, I think, with this lack of humility, I guess, at the end of the day, that especially young people have now, where they genuinely think they know everything. Even when I was young, I at least, you know, I thought, well, I think my grandpa's wrong about this, but he's my grandpa and he's been around for 80 years. So I'm going to go with him on this one. There's no humility now. And that's celebrated, I guess, to this lack of humility.
Yes,
it's rewarded.
I think this is like the common complaint of old people talking about young people going back to ancient days, right? But nevertheless, nevertheless, I think it's especially true now. And there's a very good reason for that. And it is that basically beginning in, I would say, the 1990s, maybe the 2000s, and really ramping up in the last decade, basically, if you get a degree in anything other than hard, you know, technology or science, anything other than STEM, you are going to be indoctrinated to death in college. And so the leaders of society have been indoctrinated, the young ones. And they have a radically different worldview than the traditional American view. They simply don't understand the traditional American view. There's a whole lot of information there that they just don't have. They have a very poor grasp on, for example, the contents of the Federalist Papers, just for example. They probably have never actually read the Constitution, you know, most your average college graduate. So I actually think that the problem is kind of a generation gap that is due to the younger generations who are now actually starting to come into power, being totally radicalized by their education. And it's, that bit is kind of scary, but not all of them. I would hasten to add, not all of them.
No, yeah, certainly not all of them. And I, was going to say, I guess I'm officially old now, but I think I guess I've always been old. Cause I remember being a kid and, you know, these people are like, well, you know, these stupid sheep herders. I'm like, have you read the Psalms? Like, do you know what you're talking about? Like, these people are not stupid. And the arrogance of young people of thinking, well, some scientist somewhere knows how lightning works. Therefore, God's not real. And it's like, this is absurd, but. We're sort of seeing the outcome of this with some of these people being elected, and it's not going well. But we don't have too much longer with you, and I this has been incredibly informative, but I want people to, yeah, here you go. Literal self-admitted communists are all over the Democratic Party now. I was going to add, I have a clip from Bill Maher, and I was going to, do you want to talk about him real quick? But really, I want people to, be able to help you in your mission and contribute. This is what it's all about, right? So other than being informed, how can people help you and contribute to what you're doing and, whether in their own personal life by, you know, making changes to Wikipedia or whatever it is, or contributions, how can people help you achieve your goals?
So I would say, first of all, follow me on X, L Signer. That'll be cool. If you have an old account on Wikipedia that you haven't used in a long time, you haven't been banned, then there is a special way to use it. You really need to be very careful about not breaking the rules. But if you're really serious about making a difference in pushing Wikipedia in another direction, that the fact of the matter is there are not that many people working on Wikipedia any given month. It's a lot fewer than what people assume it is. There are a lot of drive-by edits, yes, of course, because it gets a lot of traffic. But those are just drive-by edits. The actual number of people who are working to any great extent is probably in the hundreds, right? If you were to, you know, get enough people on Wikipedia making reasonable edits and then occasionally making progress in other directions, that can make a big difference. It doesn't actually take that many. So that's one thing. Another thing is, I would encourage people, if they've got X accounts or blogs, Substacks, or even just a Google Doc, right? Write a review of a Wikipedia article, right? And then send it to me. I've posted it, a thread about this on X recently. So go to L Sanger on X and just post a link to your review underneath that. I will give you early access to, WikiCritic. So that'd be great. I need more beta testers and I want to go, you know, launch with a bang. So that would be awesome.
Oh, that would be great. And, you know, people are always, the question I probably get most is like, what can I do? What, I want to be involved. And it's like, well, here you go, folks. This is how you can be involved. You can do it from the comfort of your computer chair, you know, probably on your phone. This is a way you can actually, and hey, you might not feel like you as an individual are able to take on this whole, you know, gigantic array of misinformation ours, but if you and your friend and your family, and if we all get involved, then, you know, we overwhelm them with numbers, but it takes us actually getting active. Incredible stuff. Larry Sanger, thank you so much for being with us. LarrySanger.org and at L Sanger on X. Thank you so much. You created such a powerful tool, and it's why it's being attacked. They recognize how powerful this is. But we can be more powerful still. Thank you so much for being with us, sir.
All right. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll be right back, folks. Don't go anywhere.
Jones is off the air.
There's a lot of noise right now.
Taking me off the air. It is beyond essential that you continue to spread the word about the broadcast and continue to support us.
That's usually when it matters most, to have people in your corner who don't flinch. We've been a partner of this program and of Alex's for a long time.
I'm handing out ice water in the Sahara. I mean, it is such the top rated, the biggest company, because they're the best, and he's a patriot.
We're not going anywhere, and that commitment runs to you. Here's the part that matters. With us, it's 8% when you buy and 0% when you sell. And here's something else. After you make your first purchase and become a client, if you're holding metals you bought somewhere else, bring them to us. We'll help you liquidate them. No commission. That means even if you didn't originally buy them from us, we'll still take care of you. That's not a promotion. It's not something that's for a limited time only. That's just the way we do business. Give us a call and we'll bend over backwards to help you.
Visit kepm.com/gold to get started, or give us a call at 720-605-3900 and let us help you make room for what matters most.
spot price, price of the metal in the ground. Miners haven't even touched it yet. Then they pull the metal out of the ground. They dig their tunnels. They drive it to the refinery. They melt it down, make it into a coin or a bar. That's wholesale. That's usually 3 to 5% over spot. We charge 8% on top of wholesale. When you liquidate, we charge zero.
Buy gold and silver bullion at wholesale. You can look every day what the price is. Type in what's wholesale gold and silver. And then you get it from them with a little processing fee. And then they buy it back for nothing with no cost. That's unprecedented. It's so easy. KPM.com/gold. Get a free telephone consultation email. You call 720-605-3900. 720-605-3900.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
A Monday warrior, mean stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean pride.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today. As always, humbled at the opportunity to deliver you the news for today, and there's still a lot more to get to. And honestly, I need to stop talking. I've got so many videos to get to, and I never get to any of them because I just can't help myself but ramble. So I'm going to silence myself now and try to go to some of these videos, although even just to set them up is going to take a second. But suffice it to say, everything is completely insane and backwards and, for lack of a better term, special needs. Should I say special needs instead? Again, it's hard not to rage at the utter stupidity that we are continually subjected to and by, and the lack of understanding at like the way things are going and the methods that'll be used to get there. In other words, a lot of people were very mad at Mamdani being a socialist in New York and basically said he's going to fail and it's never going to work. New York's his capitalist city. Of course, my take was completely different, which was there's a lot of billionaires in New York right now that are socialist, and they see Mamdani as a test case. And they know that if Mamdani horrifically fails, then that's pretty much the end of socialism in America. It'll be held up as an example of like, do you see how dumb this stuff is? We'll never do this. So they will actually make up the shortfalls. They will actually, you know, be willing to donate millions of dollars so that it looks like socialism is succeeding. Same thing with this grocery store that he's starting. People like scoff and just are like, oh, it's a city-run grocery store. Good luck. Now, there have been examples of city-run grocery stores failing very recently in the past. But again, I think the high awareness of what Mamdani's doing is going to change the calculus a little bit. I think those stores are going to do incredibly well. I think I would probably go shopping at them if I lived in New York because it comes along with a 30% discount on foodstuffs. Yeah, I'm probably going to take advantage of that if I were there. It'd be hard not to. It'd be hard to be paying a third more for food in my righteous stand against socialism when it's just like available right there. What's going to actually happen is it's going to put other grocers out of business. No one's going to go to them when you can go to the city-run one, and the city one doesn't have to make a profit. It's not profit-driven. It can wait. It can lose as much money as it wants, and it will be, you know, filled in by the taxpayer dollars. It's going to succeed, and it might destroy the city and then the country as it succeeds. But the idea that you're just going to scoff at this and go, "Oh, socialism, we'll see how that goes." It's like it's probably going to go pretty well. No, he's probably going to take a bunch of money from rich people and, you know, have cheap food, and that's going to put other places out of business, and then those other places are going to, you know, have to, they're going to appeal to the government and go, hey, we're going out of business here. If we go out of business, it's going to be a food desert. I guess you got to subsidize us now. It's a cancer that grows. It's like somebody gets cancer and you go, cancer doesn't work. You know, the cells, they don't function once they get cancer. So, you know, it's going to go away. It's like, that's not how it works. No, it distorts and destroys everything it touches, and then it moves on to the next thing, and then the next thing, and then the next thing. It's a cancer. You can't just ignore it. Let's go to clip number 4 here. New York grocery discount program plans eligibility text to limit benefits to residents. So yes, folks, in New York City, you'll be able to vote without an ID, but not shop without an ID. Let's watch.
how are you going to keep people from taking advantage of that, you know, that deal, basically? And is there going to be a limit on the number of items that someone can take that are discounted at that level from that essential basket?
So our RFP makes very clear that this is a program for New Yorkers to be able to put food on the table, not a program for people to be able to make a quick buck through reselling. I'm going to pass it over to our EDC head, Jeannie Pack, to add some additional details.
Yes, yeah, so if you look at our RFP for the operator, we are looking to make sure that we target New Yorkers, whether it be at sort of a library card-esque thing, and also we manage who's buying and that is focused on everyday New Yorkers. So we are mindful of that, and so we're going to make sure that we have all the things in place to ensure that that does not happen.
Yes, yeah, so I guess it kind of does make sense to have socialism and like an internationalism at the same time. Like socialism can make sense, but it's got to be like bounded by territories and it's got to only apply to the people in that group. It's kind of like socialism needs some sort of offsetting countermeasure like nationalism for it to work. Am I crazy here?
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with, my decision. And that is ivermectin with minbenzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this. But minbenzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search minbenzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists, you'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
You are listening to an AJN Live Frontline Report. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Fourth hour is on. It is 2:06 p.m. Central Time, and we so much to talk about. Obviously, the invasion of the Spanish enclave of Ceuta continues unabated and causing a lot of problems, people discovering the real engine, the motive behind that coming out of Israel. We also have a debate that was held in Oxford where, and I guess it was either the last week or over this weekend, the videos came out about should Islam be trusted or should we be suspicious of Muslims? Some absolutely bombshell clips coming out of that I would really like to show you. We also have a mob of Muslims attacking Jake Lang yet again in Dearborn, Michigan. Some harrowing footage out of that. Likewise, harrowing footage of multiple friends of the show, Nick Sortor and Carolyn Boroshenko being attacked at the BLM, whatever they call it, CHAZ, Community Autonomous Zone. There, again, it just goes on at the Iran war. We got just crazy videos across the board. And folks, I do hope you can support us. I hope that you can contribute to this effort in any way that you can. If that just means following us on social media, sharing the content, downloading it yourself, uploading it yourself. I mean, still to this day, and as always, our stuff is free to air, free to take down, manipulate, change, re-upload, do it. We aren't going to copyright strike you. We're not trying to get a chunk of change. You used our content. You have to pay. No. Use our content. Use it. Make your own money. Go, create edits and put it into AI and fancy it up with graphics and then put it on TikTok and monetize that. Do it. We don't care. We want the information out there. It's always been about the information since that is the method of attack. It has to be the method of defense as well. Support us in this by going to thealexjonesstore.com. Of course, we make it so easy for you to support us. It is not difficult. It is not even a sacrifice, really, because what you're getting is well worth the price that you're paying and then some, I would say. However, we do recognize and appreciate and respect the fact that our audience are hard workers. Our audience is not the type to rely on the government or dishonestly gain from the taxpayers. We know that you work for your money, and we want and need to give you something that is worth the sacrifice that you're making, even though it's not really a sacrifice. We understand you could shop elsewhere. You could, you know, just choose not to. We appreciate that you do, and we try desperately to make it worth it, not only by being as powerful as we can politically, by being as forthright and honest and truthful as we possibly can be. That is a cool hat. I heard Alex, I was listening earlier, and I heard Alex go, oh, that's a cool hat, the red, white. That is a very cool hat. Not only are we doing everything we can to be worthy of your support here on air and as we make our reports and, you know, file our articles, but also in the actual stuff that you get, the actual products that you're buying are top of the line, beautiful, amazing, whether it's the t-shirts, the hats, the merchandise of all types, which, hey, if you don't want to really, you know, out there like in your face hat, that's, we got tons of stuff just with a subtle little American flag or whatever else. But of course, it's the supplements that keep people coming back over and over because they know how powerful and good they are. Right now, you are getting half off. You're getting 50% off Ultimate Power Energy Drink Mix. So, you know, instead of drinking a canned energy drink with 14 pounds of sugar in it and all this other stuff that makes you feel energetic but causes you to crash later. No, this is real power. This is ultimate power. This is energy and focus at the cellular level in two great flavors, Freedom Mango and Patriot Punch. Both of those 50% off right now. The best time to try it. And if you've tried it, you're probably a fan of it. Also the best time to stock up on it. Ultimate Power, now on sale, thealexjonesstore.com. Just one of the many products that are 50% off, rather. 40% off, you're getting zeolite tincture, methylene blue tinctures, TMOS gummies, Shilajit gummies, and the methylene blue gummies, Ultimate Chill, and Ultimate Energy. All of those are 40% off as well. So go to thealexjonesstore.com today. Make your purchase. Support us. Know that you are directly contributing into the greatest weapon system ever devised against the New World Order and the harms they cause to all of humanity, which are unimaginable, but also measurable. So please support us, thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. But the cheap and easy way is just to share our content. We so appreciate that. At the end of the day, if you're not doing everything you can to wake up normies, you're wasting your time. That's our philosophy here, and it has worked so far and will continue to work. I am not interested in preaching to the choir. I'm not interested in, you know, hearing the accolades of a small number of hyper-partisan X accounts. I want to be able to go to walk down the street and my neighbors are aware of what's going on and the cashier at the supermarket knows what's going on. And we can talk about this stuff on the boat with my in-laws. Like, this needs to be a regular thing. I don't want to be talking to a very small cadre of hyper-motivated people. Everybody in the world needs to know this. And we need to tell them that they need to know. They don't even know they need to know it. You understand what I mean? They don't even know they're missing out on the truth. They're actually reading the newspapers and absorbing it uncritically. It's crazy. But like, if you're hearing my voice, you are a very unique person. I used to say this all the time, and it's different now. It is different now, and that's a success. That's a victory, right? The people know who people like Klaus Schwab are, Larry Fink. I mean, the fact people know about Jeffrey Epstein, which again is moderately frustrating because, like, we've been talking about Epstein forever, and now you got a bunch of leftists that are like, oh, Jeffrey Epstein, you mean Donald Trump's best friend? And it's like, why can you guys not be normal human beings? Why can you not just, like, I don't know, it's crazy. It is crazy. Because, like, I've had this experience where, like, I try to tell people about stuff. I'm like, yeah, Jeffrey Epstein, Rape Island, Lolita Express, like, high-level blackmail. I posted a video. We should probably play it more because It's such a good one. It took me forever to find, too. It was Rob Dew in, I think, 2017. We're walking around the streets of New York City, and he's informing people, and we get into a conversation. He's like, no, you don't understand. At the highest level, they're all pedophiles because they make you do horrible things so that they have blackmail on you so that they can control you. It's 2017. I mean, and this was old news for us. I mean, this is like, you know, we're explaining the basics to people on the streets of New York that this is the way things function. But it's worth it to remind people, like, hey, this was 9 years ago, and we had them dead to rights. We knew exactly what was going on. We are not, I'm sorry, no offense, but we're not with you. You're way behind. You're like, we're so far ahead, we can't even see you anymore. We have to go back to remind, to, like, inform you of what we learned 20 years ago, which is fine, which is what we have to do. But it's a little frustrating when people are like, oh, we're all learning about COVID. We're all learning about Jeffrey Epstein. It's like, where have you guys been? And so you try to tell them a long time ago and they don't care. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, here's a vector of attack on Trump, Epstein. And people are like, oh, now it's a big deal. Now it's important to understand. Very frustrating. Luckily, we here at the Alex Jones Network, we do not need some ulterior motive to tell you the truth. We're just going to tell you the truth. And the truth today is that socialist politicians are making major strides, gaining major ground all across the United States because, really, if you want to put the blame on anything, you got to put it on conservatives in America, Republicans in America. They have totally and utterly failed to pass on the beliefs and the morality of our forefathers so that people nowadays, they genuinely do not understand, have no conception of why a nation or a individual would not want to be dependent on another. It's like, and I've heard this so many times recently from just friends and family and people I'm talking to, and they're even relating other people saying like, look, today in America, the only way to get ahead is to steal the money. Like that's what's happening. That is becoming the case, just like it is literally everywhere else in the world. And we've talked about this a lot on the War Room and the Alex Jones Show, just the idea that as flawed as America can be in certain times, we still live in a country where I don't have to bribe the cop when I get pulled over. In fact, if I tried to bribe the cop, they'd probably bring me in for trying to bribe them. Yeah, try that in literally any other country that's not like Northern Europe. Mexico is like pretty darn close to America. We have a lot in common. We're both republics. We both were founded in revolution. I mean, the similarities between, we're not all that different, but that little degree of difference, that tiny little separation between the American culture and the Mexican culture means in Mexico, you've got beheaded bodies hanging off of lamp poles and you've got massacres being carried out in total secret by members of the government that are also members of the cartel. It means you have cartels endemic in every form of government in the entire country and that you're having to bribe your way out of, you know, police stops. And I mean, it's not that much of a difference. It's cranking that, you know, thermostat from 72 to 74, but you know, it makes a big difference on your quality of life and your ability to get things done and your ability to achieve greatness. It can all be ruined by just a portion of our country reaching that critical mass, portion of people who don't understand what this country's about or why we believe the things we believe. They can win. That's the problem with democracy. They don't have to prove the capability to actually understand the choices that they're making. They get to make the choice on whatever parameters they've come up with. And it's getting bad. And it's getting really bad. Let's go first to clip number 6 here. This is Scott Galloway, who apparently supported Mamdani, but now that it's coming to fruition, he's having regrets. Let's watch.
And I've been doxxed.
You've been doxxed? What? Tell me.
So I don't know if you've heard, but Mayor Mamdani has decided to release a list of the 950,000 residences with addresses and names that might be eligible for his pied-à-terre tax. I came out in favor of this tax. This is the definition. He's taken a legitimate source of tax revenue and he's turned it into a wanted poster. And the question I would have is, other than trying to identify and imply these people have done something wrong, and then 18 months after a healthcare CEO was executed in the street and then published the list, what is the upside here? Why is he doing this?
To destroy you, obviously. It's not that kind of, again, we've talked about this a lot too. What's the difference to them between you being shot in the back of the head by an assassin or, you know, being stripped of all your belongings and, you know, sent to jail because you're an evil billionaire? It's like you've got the top and the bottom now combined in this effort to destroy the middle or the super rich. But regardless, it's people with the political power and the base who gives them that political power are both combined in their petulant and childish idea that you have things they don't. They can take them from you and give them to themselves and everything will continue as normal. This is a delusion. It's a delusion that you fed into by supporting this and voting for it. So have you learned your lesson? Are you going to keep making that mistake? Are you a human being? Because this again is the question. Does it need to affect you personally? I mean, once it does affect you personally, you know, there are certain layers of humanity, right? He's, I guess, broken through that second layer where it's like, I support something that sounds good, and then when it affects me, I don't like it anymore. And it's like, did you need it to defend? You couldn't just see that this was all bad? You had to actually have it inflicted on you? It's like, you can go, oh, the crime rate's fine, and then you get, this happened to Anna Kasparian, the Young Turks. She was total leftist, liberal, just believed in everything. The homeless people needed billions of dollars and be cared for, and she got attacked by a homeless person. And then in relating her personal story of being attacked, she saw that all of her comrades were blaming her and were mad at her for daring to describe the way she was attacked. She's like, well, what the hell? This feels terrible. It's like, yeah, duh. You didn't know that? You didn't know that this is what people are feeling all around? You had to actually feel it yourself? Like, what is wrong with you? Do you understand what I mean? Like, you're a human being. You have the ability to imagine. You have the ability to project your mind. You can think, what if I got attacked by a homeless person? What if in trying to get justice for that attack, my attacker is let off the hook? Wouldn't that feel bad for me? I guess I shouldn't support that position. But instead they support it and support it. And even when people are going, hey, this is ruining my life, they're like, shut up, you're a racist, until it affects them. Then they realize, but hey, at least they've achieved that. That's like just one level. I mean, the next level lower would be the type of people who vote for this stuff, get the negative effects, and continue voting for it, right? Even Anna Kasparian, like, she's not the type of, liberal leftist that you see who will be crying into the camera about how she doesn't feel safe when she's walking home while simultaneously voting to import a million criminal rapists into her country. So I'm like, I'm taking what I can get at this point. I'm begging for scraps of humanity. And all I can get is people, billionaires, like smart people who are like in charge of industries, they can't figure out that socialism is bad until it affects them personally. Like, I'm sorry that it's like this, but okay, great. At least, at least they're able to understand that, yes, the thing they wanted is now affecting them and it's bad. So it was always bad. I hope they can truly understand this stuff. But then you've got stuff like this. Clip number one. This is James Tallarico. He's maybe the premier example, certainly one of them. It's a phenomenon at this point. AOC, Mamdani, James Tallarico, mayor of Seattle, whatever the hell her name is, this Hong woman, I'll get to her in a second, Francesca Hong, who's running for governor in Wisconsin, not Michigan. I was mistaken earlier. She's running for governor of Wisconsin. They're people who, I mean, it's not like they've never run a business. They've never made a paycheck. They've never, Lena Hidalgo would be another one of these. We raged against her when she was running to be, grand poobah of Harris County, a grand judge who has inordinate power. Same type of thing with her. It was like, look at her resume. It's like she went to school and she went to school again. Then she volunteered with like an NGO to help import migrants. And now she's in charge of Harris County. And it's like, who thought putting this idiot in charge? And since then, by the way, she's like not there half the time because she's clinically depressed and has to go lay down. And it's just like, what is going on? You're telling me that in this case, Houston, Texas, like the fourth largest city in America, the home of these massive oil companies and like some of the finest museums in the world, you couldn't find a reasonably intelligent person with some executive experience to actually helm this ship? They don't care. I don't get it. They don't care. And the voters don't care. James Tallarico has never had a bank account, folks. James Tallarico, who at this point is polling ahead of the Republican to be senator of Texas, the man has never had his own bank account. He shares a checking account with his mother. Do you understand what I just said? When I was in sixth grade, I had a checking account. This man, who's going to be senator of Texas, very likely to be senator of Texas, never had a bank account. People are going to vote for him, and that's the problem. It wouldn't be a problem if we had reasonable people voting. If like adults who actually had their lives together and understood things and could read at a sixth grade level. Like, if you ask them, hey, should the person who represents your state in the Senate, should they have, like, life experience? Should they have actually shown their ability to make decisions appropriately with stakes, you know, with actual, like, consequences? Apparently not. Apparently not. So let's go to some of these. Clip number one here. Here's James Tallarico nodding along as one of his constituents talks about Carmelo Anthony being falsely accused and convicted. Let's watch.
Our people have getting killed left and right. Carmelo Anthony's case is just a tragedy. Excuse my language. But it is. But it is. So what are we going to do to fix those harms?
I mean, what is there even to say? What did she even say? What? Sorry, can we play it again? Just, I want that first part. I should have written it down. Let's play that clip again. I just want to hear how she frames it at the very beginning.
Our people have getting killed left and right.
Carmelo, our people have getting killed left and right. That's right. Our people have getting killed left and right. Our people have getting killed left and right. Like Carmelo Anthony. Carmelo Anthony, I'll remind you, murdered a kid. He didn't die. What are you even talking about? And he's nodding. And James Tallarico, child, little baby, is nodding along. Yes, absolutely. The injustice of it all. Carmelo Anthony, who nobody actually believes Carmelo Anthony is innocent. Nobody actually believes that. This woman doesn't believe that. If she does, she's listening to people who are lying to her, who they don't believe it. Nobody believes Carmelo Anthony is anything but guilty. He shows up, pulls a knife out of his backpack, stabs a man in the heart for no reason, and runs away. And these people are like, this is a travesty. We have to fix this. And James Tallarico, a child who has never bought anything without mommy's permission, is sitting there nodding along like he knows what the hell she's talking about and agrees with it. Completely and utterly and ridiculously insane. And of course, the crowd cheers like they agree. So again, I want to ask, like, what do we do about this? What do we do about the fact that we live in a country, people whose votes count just as much as ours, that believe that Carmelo frickin' Anthony is some sort of victim of injustice or murder, I guess. I guess she thinks he got murdered. Because he murdered somebody and got convicted for it, that's murder, I guess. Same type of thing with the black kid who drowned on the party boat or whatever. And it's like we are still hearing this after months and months and months. The kid drowned. He drowned by himself. And there's no claim of foul play whatsoever. But we have to act like he got murdered. Like, what do we do with a population that believes the most outrageous and ridiculous lies and then votes for people whose only qualification is that they also believe those lies? What do we do? What do we do exactly? I don't really have a good answer. I mean, I've got answers. I just can't say them on the air. So I'm communicating with you as we speak telepathically. We have things like this. Clip number 12. You know, we'll go to this on the other side, but it's a person who was basically forced to run for office in Mecklenburg County because his house was shot at, his family almost killed, and nobody would return his calls or investigate it. And as we look at this, as we go into the final segment here, we're just going to try to take a bird's eye view at the utter collapse that America is facing with and try desperately to illustrate to our fellow Americans that this is a choice being made, that this is not a matter of necessity. It's not a matter of justice. It's not a matter of lack of resources. Our entire political establishment is coordinated, combined. They're comrades in arms in this war against you, against me, and against the American people and the middle class and white people and our history, which again, we've explained a million billion times over. And the greatest example, luckily it sort of hit the headlines last week. It's that Smithsonian chart that tells you, you know what whiteness is? Everything good and healthy and strong. It's, you know, objective reality and family and owning businesses. Not that complicated, folks. That's what they want to destroy. They don't care who it is that supports it. They want to destroy you. So what they do is they say independence in the Constitution, that's an aspect of whiteness. Whiteness is evil. Don't you want to get rid of the Constitution now so I can oppress you?
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts. Go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege. It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, you've seen the attacks. You've seen the deplatforming. You've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments. We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out of the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones. And the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United Payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan, in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system. Even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots, and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us, and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market, and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of it is information warfare and financial, and this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down, and First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
The answer to 1984 is 1776. You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Does anybody really know the secret or the combination for this life and where they keep it?
All right, welcome back, folks. This is The Alex Jones Show. I might try to change up my tone here a little bit, because I increasingly get comments on X or even from family members My mom would be like, I tried to watch your show today. I made it about 5 minutes. It was too much. Where people are just going, yeah, I can't really make it through an episode. It's too blackpilling. I'm going to try not to blackpill you, even though it's never been my goal. I don't think I've changed the way I've covered things very much. I don't feel necessarily more blackpilled than I did 5 years ago. Certainly not any less by any means. I'm not trying to blackpill you. It's certainly not my mission. In fact, my mission is the exact opposite. You know, Napoleon has a quote that's like 9/10 of war is morale. The Romans had a quote, your foe is not defeated unless he considers himself so. So I understand that this is a war, this is an information war, and keeping your spirits up is like a core aspect of war. You know, it's not something you can just, it's not something that is auxiliary and extra, right? Like if you're planning a campaign of actual warfare, you don't have a choice whether or not to include a baggage train. Like that's how you're army survives, so you're going to die if you don't have that. In the same way, if we are allow ourselves to be overcome and beaten down and depressed by the bad things happening in the world, how are we ever going to have the energy or stamina to stand up against it and fight back? And if it seems hopeless, then it is. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you have no hope and you don't try to change it, then okay, it's hopeless. But if you can actually understand that there's a way out of this and that, in fact, all these problems are imminently solvable. Like, I'm less black-pilled than whatever the color pill it is to be frustrated. I'm the frustration pill where it's like, it's not like, oh my God, everything is terrible and there's nothing we can do. It's like, oh my God, everything is terrible. And it would be so easy. It would be a matter of minutes to fix all these problems if we actually cared to. If we actually had people who represented us in our government and actually cared about our well-being and weren't trying to sell us out continually forever at every pass, it would be pretty simple, actually, to solve all of this. So it's more frustration to me than blackpilling, but I'm changing the tune here. I'm changing the tune. We're changing the key because I got a lot of funny videos to show you here as well. But let's begin with what could start off as yet another heartbreaking story of yet another random act of violence in America, forever plaguing our streets. This case, it was a potential mass shooting at an In-N-Out Burger that was foiled and stopped. And once again, I think this fits perfectly into the InfoWars Alex Jones mindset, which is twofold. You have to try desperately to gain political power, to set things right, to make laws, to support your people. You've got to do that at the same time that that's going through its long and arduous process. You got to be prepared in case it doesn't work. You got to be stocking up food. You got to be prepared with your weapons. You've got to stay prepared in case in case plan A doesn't work out, you got to have a plan B. But actually, they're not plan A and plan B. They're in coordination. They're in combination. We say with water filters, yes, you want to try to pass a bill to get the fluoride out of the water. In the meantime, filter your damn water, right? It's not actually that complicated. And so I love this guy. His name, if I can get it here, is the Idaho shooter. Well, there are two shooters. There was an Idaho shooter who tried to kill people, and then there was the hero that stopped him. His name is Jordan Salinas, and he's speaking out about his actions in saving the day at that In-N-Out Burger random shooting over the weekend. Let's watch.
Tried to stop the shooting as it happened, an off-duty state trooper and a civilian. You can see footage here that appears to show one of them shooting back at the shooter. The civilian, identified by local media as 35-year-old Jordan Salinas. Here's Twin Falls Police Chief describing their heroic actions that likely saved lives.
We can confirm that there was an off-duty state trooper and a citizen who actively engaged the suspect by returning gunfire towards him. We believe their actions helped drive the suspect away from the scene, preventing further casualties.
According to reporting from the Idaho Statesman, Salinas instinctively ran toward the gunfire, drawing a semi-automatic pistol and fired on the mass shooter. The incident happened around 2:30 p.m. Saturday at a busy shopping plaza in Twin Falls. In-N-Out's president, Lindsay Snyder, says customers and an employee were among the victims, though the names of victims are not being released by law enforcement at this time. Video shows the suspect dressed in black, carrying a long rifle. Law enforcement described a chaotic scene as customers and employees at the In-N-Out ran from the restaurant as gunshots rang out.
Brilliant from Gateway Pundit. Heroic armed citizen speaks out after fighting back against Idaho In-N-Out gunmen. Says he trained for years for this moment. And of course, the photo that's gone viral is that one there on the right of him, you know, in the shooting stance, pistol level than it is a perfect frame, perfect recreation of a still frame from one of his training videos. People have been pointing out, you know, this is, you're not just training for fun. It is tragic. Police have ID'd 23-year-old Ashley Garibe as one of those killed when the gunman opened fire at the Idaho In-N-Out. She was an employee at the restaurant in Twin Falls and was from California. So a tragedy, obviously, but man, it could have been a lot worse. It could have been a heck of a lot worse. And thank God, a real American who understands, appreciates, and exercises the Second Amendment was there to put down the threat before it could, you know, fully be exercised. And yeah, just brilliant. Just absolutely brilliant. Meanwhile, we got to go to it. I told you I was, you know, it's going to be a white pilling, like, you know, I don't know if it's going to wipe, but at least you can laugh, right? Hey, I may not be able to show you the, you know, golden pathway to the promised land, but at least we can laugh at hell. At least we can laugh at the hell that we're living in, right? This video just, I think, tells you everything you need to know about the modern world. I think this should be engraved into a golden plate and sent up into space for alien creatures to find so they know exactly what they're dealing with down here on Earth. Let's go to clip number 19. Here's a woman trying to use a staircase in Piccadilly Circus there in the UK. She's having some trouble because she's in a wheelchair, but you'll never guess how she eventually is able to surmount this obstacle. Let's watch.
The lift's down. Rip. Here's what happens if you're a wheelchair user and the lift breaks at the train station. This was Manchester Piccadilly, and when I arrived, the lift was broken and I had my chair and attachment. I spoke to the staff and they brought down a stair lift.
I don't know if it works.
The first option was the built-in stair lift, but this actually didn't work. They figured out that it was broken. So that was two options completely down. The second option was a small portable stair lift, which didn't look as sturdy, and I was quite scared of it, not gonna lie. But they brought it down anyway, and when we got to the bottom, we realized that my chair wouldn't fit onto it. I have quite a long wheelbase with my attachment, so we couldn't do it. We'd just gotten off a flight too, so I couldn't even detach my attachment because it was physically taped together and we didn't have scissors. So in the end, because I'm ambulatory and I did have a bit of energy on this day, I offered to walk up the stairs while they carried up my setup. The staff were really helpful in this case, but I'm not sure how it would have been fixed if I couldn't walk up the stairs. Travel is really unpredictable anyway, but if you add in being a wheelchair user, you never quite know what's going to happen or how to get to your destination. So traveling with a disability is a roller coaster.
She walked, folks. She walked up the stairs. What? She's like, I don't know what would have happened if I couldn't walk up the stairs. Yeah, I guess, but you can. But you can actually walk up the stairs. Apparently this woman, I haven't actually confirmed this, but I saw videos, people, apparently she does gymnastics. Apparently she spends her time doing like balance beam and stuff, but she's also in a wheelchair, but she's also ambulatory. What? And I just can't. It's so stupid. It's so stupid. That was not a parody. That was not a joke. That was total sincerity. Like, that's the crazy thing on top of it. She makes this video trying to get sympathy for how hard it is to be a wheelchair user. And in her story, she walks up the staircase on her own volition and with her own power. What are you talking about, lady? And it's like, I don't know, something about the fact that it's like this. This woman's like, I can't get up the staircase. I need help. And so we have at least three other options for her. It's like, well, there's a lift and there's a staircase. There's a wheelchair lifter built into the staircase. And we have a separate, you know, device to use it. All incredible technologies, right? So it's like, first of all, it's this idea that it's like, oh, you have a problem. Here's one technology. Here's another technology. Here's this. Here's it. Here's the, you know, entirety of our industrial output. Here's, you know, hours of engineering and medical care. It's all gone into creating these things. First of all, they don't even work. First of all, that's the first, like, symbol of our societies. We have three different ways to get up the stairs. All three of them are broken. All three of them don't work. All three of them have not been maintained, have not been kept up, and are totally useless. Why do we even have them in the first place? Or how do we not have money to repair them in the first place? Oh, because you're bringing in millions of dependents to live off the government and go to your doctors. Okay, fine. So it's like you do all of this, you roll out the red carpet, you have five different technological advantages for them to help them, and it's like they never even need it in the first place. But you still have to do the work. But they still made the people go get the chairlift thing. They made them test it. Oh, it's not going to work. Made them carry the wheelchair up the stairs, you know, at the end of the day. And it's like, that was all just because you didn't want to walk up. You didn't even need any of that anyway. All of the outpouring of our generosity is being squandered because you were never even incapable of living for yourself, dealing with it yourself. Okay, great. I mean, that's it. That's our society in a nutshell. It's the outpouring of our industrial genius and engineering mastery being squandered on people who have no appreciation for it, couldn't create it if they wanted to, and don't actually need it. So there you go. We live in hell, but at least you can see the irony. I hope. Let's go now to clip number 15. It's a comedy skit where, again, we're going to get back into the leftist attitude. The leftist attitude of these progressive children that are now running entire cities in the United States. Let's go to clip number 15.
Oh my gosh.
Hey, welcome to heaven.
Wow, this place is beautiful.
Yeah, you were a really good person and now you're here.
This is unbelievable. What helped me get into heaven?
Well, for starters, all your advocacy for climate change helped stop global warming and kept the planet from melting.
Really? Oh, I knew it wasn't a hoax.
Yeah. I mean, because of your actions, the planet's now cooling and everyone's gonna freeze to death in 30 years.
What?
Well, maybe not 30, but 10, 20 more or less. But at the time, you were right.
Well, okay, well, what else got me in?
Oh, lots of stuff. You helped stop ICE from deporting multiple undocumented immigrants and eventually led to them getting abolished.
No way. Wow, we did finally stop those Nazi bastards.
Yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of bad hombres did get to stay, though, and they continued murdering and raping whoever they wanted, facing little to no consequences.
Okay, well, that doesn't sound like a very good thing.
What? It was a wonderful thing. You didn't know. You acted in good faith at the time.
Okay, well, I guess you would be right. Anything else I did good?
Well, you cut ties and disowned that evil Republican family of yours.
Evil? They were worse than evil. They were racist.
Yeah. I mean, you disowned them because of who they voted for, and although they would have never disowned you because they loved and respected you too much, and it absolutely shattered your mother's heart when you wouldn't return her phone calls or her texts, so she ended up dying of a broken heart.
But hey, that racist bitch is burning in hell right now.
I killed my mother?
Hey, love schmove. You did what was best for your political party.
Listen, man, it honestly doesn't sound like I was a good person at all.
What? That's not what it sounds like to God, baby.
Although you really didn't believe in God.
Oh, but hey, you're forgetting about all the stuff you did for women's rights.
Oh my gosh, please, no.
You made sure women always had a right to choose and you got the government to stay away from women's bodies.
Please don't say it.
Unfortunately, that did lead to millions of unborn babies being murdered every year.
No, God, stop, just stop. Jesus, man.
Hey, don't take the Lord's name in vain. Don't ever do that.
I'm such a terrible person. This doesn't even feel like heaven.
What? That's not true. Come on, all that pot you smoked, cutting your son's balls off when he was 3 years old. I mean, where did you think you were gonna end up?
Heaven?
Well, too bad. You're in hell.
Oh, God.
Oh, relax. Ronald Reagan, George H.W., and Jimmy Carter are all right over there. I mean, where did you think you were?
I didn't know.
You were a terrible person. I mean, come on. Didn't you wonder why you didn't see Hitler roaming around here?
Hitler made it to heaven?
Of course he did. He believed in the divinity of Christ. Subscribe and let me know what you want me to do next.
That's pretty good. That is pretty good. Samuel Jacob comedy. Is that guy's name? I mean, what do they but seriously, but really, they think they're good people? Disowning their families? I mean, this, it really does cut to the heart of it, doesn't it? And I'm like, okay, I've got 9 minutes left in the segment. Do I have 9 minutes left of not terrible things? I've got terrible things. I could show you some stuff, folks. My God. I mean, you want to talk about the migrants in Ceuta? I could show you. You know, Spanish Coast Guard talking about how they literally threw their own children overboard when they thought, but anyway, but I don't want to get into that, but I'm trying to stay positive here. Can I do it for 9 minutes? Can we stay positive for 9 minutes? depends on your definition. Let's go now to clip number 24. Once again, this is not a good thing. This is not a positive thing. It is, in a sickly, ironic, poisonous sort of way, very, very funny. Folks, we've all seen, it's a staple, really, of American cinema. The classic scene, you think of, like, Full Metal Jacket. You're a Marine recruit, first day in boot camp, and you get the verbal lashing that sets the stage for what's going to come next. We've all seen real examples of this, fictional examples of this. It lives in our collective subconscious as this concept, this idea that you join the army, you get broken down verbally, beaten down physically, and then remade, rebuilt into a real human being. Things are a little bit different these days. A little bit different. Let's go now. Clip number 24. Everything I saw said this was real. Believe it or not, to the best of my knowledge, this is a literal induction presentation by the United States Marines. Not exactly your classic Full Metal Jacket style. What was the guy's name? Lee Ermey, I think. It's a little different these days. Let's watch.
We will treat you as we do our soldiers, with violence, fairness, dignity, and compassion. It's a call on verbal abuse by any Marine or recruits. Will not be tolerated. If anyone should abuse or mistreat you, I expect you to report such incident immediately to me or one of my drill instructors. Furthermore, if you feel I have mistreated you, I expect you to report such incident to your series commander. My drill instructors and I will be with you every day, everywhere that you go. I have told you what my drill instructors and I will do. From you, we demand the following. You will give 100% of yourself at all times. Obey our orders quickly, fittingly, and without question. Treat all Marines and recruits with courtesy and respect. You will not physically abuse or verbally threaten another Marine or recruit. Be completely honest in everything that you do. A Marine never lies or cheats. Respect the rights and properties of all others. A Marine never steals. You must work hard to strengthen your body, your spirit, and your mind. Be proud of yourself in that uniform you now wear. Above all else, never quit or give up, for we offer you the challenge of recruiting and the opportunity to earn the title United States Marine.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add to that. I mean, I got nothing. I mean, it is literally worse than a South Park episode. Like, the man had, was it a man? I couldn't even tell. For our radio listeners, you just saw a being, a humanoid sort of thing, very scary, almost like a gray, like an alien gray. Maybe this is a part of Disclosure or something, but very, very, very skinny. Like, I was like, this guy's not a Marine, right? Like, don't you have to, like, do physical things to be a Marine? This person looks like a twig. Like, I'm not a super buff guy. I'm on the skinny side, but, like, this is unhealthy. And the fact that he is screaming in this, I think this person's trans. I mean, that was a trans voice if I've ever heard one. He's got tattoos all over his arms, I guess, or maybe those are scars from where they took the meat to make his fake penis. I don't really know what we're looking at exactly here. I know it sounds like like Cartman screeching. And the fact that he's screaming just like,
you will be respected. We love you and we'll never hurt you. And if anyone hurts you, you are too tattle. Immediately.
Oh my god. I mean, how do you take this seriously? Look at that dude standing behind him. It's a black dude standing behind him like a freaking Greek statue. That dude, I would be scared of yelling. It's like 7 feet tall. It's like he was carved out of bronze. That's the Marine that should be yelling at the recruits. Why is the person a head shorter than him, weighing half as much as him, with his pants all the way up at his nipples? Like, what is this? What is this? This is I don't know. Is this stop being funny about halfway through the video? About halfway through the video, I was like, all right, this isn't really funny anymore. This is just kind of sad. This is just kind of sad and pathetic and weird. The Marines. These are the fabled Marines. Yeah, I mean, I got nothing. I got nothing to add for that. My God. I mean, but seriously, my God, we only have a few more minutes. We're not gonna be able to get all of these. This video goes on for 8 solid minutes. We'll play a few here. Clip number 33. This is the Seattle mayor practically crying because she fired the chief of police. And, this is what I mean. This is the children that they're now electing. She's been in charge of Seattle for like 4 months. The entire city has turned on her and she has no justification for the choices that she makes, because why should she? She has never had a job. She lived in her parents' basement when she was elected to be mayor. Why would you elect somebody who lives in their parents' basement to be mayor? Like, I understand. There's probably a lot of people listening to me right now. You're in bad situation. You know, you lost your job to some Indian for, you know, nothing you could do about it. I don't blame people who have to live with their parents by necessity. This person lived with their parents because they had no ambitions, had no skills that anybody would pay for, and are a socialist layabout who is now mayor of one of the biggest cities in America. Here's how she handled the questioning from reporters in liberal Seattle. The journalist class in liberal Seattle is now turned against this woman, but I guarantee you they all voted for her. Let's watch.
I understand that many of my colleagues on the city council disagree with the decision to move forward with a leadership change at SPD at this time. I am making what I firmly believe is the right decision at the right time.
The optics are that you are making Chief Barnes the fall guy for missteps that happened after the Seattle Center shooting, including the 5-hour lack of information, except for a statement from your office which contained errors. What do you want members of the public who say you've made him the fall guy?
Yeah, I'll say again, I firmly believe that I'm making the right decision at the right time. And part of this is a feeling of urgency around upcoming events this summer, including this weekend, wanting to make sure that we have the right leadership in place at SPD, the right communications protocols, so that as we move forward, we can be much clearer with the public if something like that should happen again.
Mayor, this is obviously the biggest decision you've made during your term. The council is not here. The council is not standing behind you. The council, as you know, has criticized, and I want to get down to their exact words. Joy Hollingsworth, the council president, called this move irresponsible and it's a tad bit reckless. Deborah Juarez says the emergent issue is this: you do not fire your chief of police in the middle of a murder investigation overseen under this administration. Her words are more than just gaffes or missteps. I see a complete lack of leadership, and for some of us, no confidence in this administration. This has reached a level where we have to have a serious conversation about the confidence we have in this executive. So this is your chance to respond to the council. Why should the city of Seattle and this council have confidence in your leadership going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll repeat what I said to one of your colleagues here, which is that I respect their differences of opinion, and as the mayor, as the executive of the city, I do have a different window into our police department than they do. And I'm making the decision that I believe is best and urgent.
So this
time
is it, folks. This is our future, is a bunch of like totally incompetent, unaccountable, largely children who've never made a decision that impacted anything other than what they had to eat for lunch, are now making decisions. And 4 months into her administration, the whole city's turned against her. The city council's against her. Does she back down? Does she show humility? Of course not. She's a petty little child. She's a little dictator. And she's going to tear down the country from the inside. And everybody else is going to follow her lead. It's absolutely pathetic and despicable. It's your future on display. Stay tuned. War Room begins in 2 minutes.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts. Go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for 1 second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, It's Win, Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square. They're all part of the same big tech machine. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Online merchants, this is the place for you. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.